switch pillows with you, but I'm allergic to sponge.
I got a bad allergy to it. I've been sneezing all night with that thing.
That's why I carry my own pillow. It's hyperallergenic. You want to switch?
No, I just want to sleep.
Me too. I am bushed. Sorry.
Why?
Why?
If I don't clear my sinuses, I'll snore all night.
You spill beer all over the bed. You smoke. You mess up the bathroom.
Well, who let you stay in the room? I even let you pay for it so you wouldn't feel like an intruder, which you most certainly are.
You're no saint. You got a free cab, you got a free room, and someone who'll listen to your boring stories.
I mean, didn't you notice on the plane when you started talking, eventually I started reading the vomit bag? Didn't that give you some sort of clue, like, hey, maybe this guy's not enjoying it? You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing or interesting. You're a miracle. Your stories have none of that. They're not even amusing accidentally. Honey, I'd like you to meet Del Griffith. He's got some amusing anecdotes for you. Oh, here's a gun so you can blow your brains out. You'll thank me for it. I could tolerate any insurance seminar. For days, I could sit there and listen to them go on and on with a big smile on my face. They'd say, how can you stand it?
And I'd say, because I've been with Del Griffith. I can take anything. You know what they'd say? They'd say, I know what you mean. Shower curtain ring guy. It's like going on a date with a chatty Cathy doll. I expect you have a little string on your chest, you know, that I pull out and have to snap back. Except I wouldn't pull it out and snap it back. You would.
From the 905 Geek Studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Fantastic! It was either that or there were like five different scenes. I felt compelled. Let me just say this. No, I'm doing the Del Griffith. I felt compelled to use Planes, Trains, and Automobiles today because we did Tommy Boy yesterday. And Tommy Boy, much as I love Tommy Boy, really is just a thinly veiled ripoff of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. There's that whole... Because really nobody cares about Tommy Boy until they get out on the road together. Until David Spade and Chris Farley get in the car to go pitch brake pads around the country. The movie's just sort of in, you know, it's like a first gear. But that whole middle section, where they're just traveling from place to place, town to town, trying to sell brake pads to schnooks. That, which is just sort of a bad Xerox of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's still fantastic. But, I mean, John Hughes obviously laid the groundwork for that. So I felt compelled to use Planes, Trains, and Automobiles today, and there were three different scenes. It was either that scene we just played, it was the Those Aren't Pillows sequence, or, God, what was the other one? There was some third segment from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. God, oh, it was when the hick comes by in the pickup truck. The guy comes by. Now, see, I can't even talk about it. I'm just laughing. The guy comes by in the pickup truck with his wife, and they're going to throw the luggage in the back of the truck. And John Candy and Steve Martin bend down to pick up the luggage. The guy's like, don't you worry, none. My wife will get it. And the wife comes out, and, of course, they're both just mouth breathers covered in tobacco juice. And he has that line about, she's small, but she's strong. Last baby come out sideways. She didn't scream or nothing.
Fantastic. It's wonderful.
It's an American classic. I would go so far as to say that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, this is the last thing I'm going to say about it for today. I would go so far as to say that film belongs on our registry of flawless motion pictures. I mean, it really is a movie without flaws.
It's just fantastic.
All right. Why, hello. It's 5 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of July in the year of our Lord. No, it's August. Is it August?
What August day is 1st.
August 1st. Damn.
Summer's almost over.
as Leonard Cohen would say. All right, it is blah, 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 in the month of August in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I am he. Thank you for coming along. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. Here's the phone number if you'd like to join us today. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Scotty J is standing by, able, willing, ready, wrapped with anticipation to pass along your phone calls to all of us with your comments on the interesting, the groundbreaking, the tedious, the mundane, the whatever. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at rickemerson.com, Sarah at 970.am, Tim at 970.am, or Scotty J at 970.am. Or again, our phone number is 503-733-2970. Here's what is on tap for today, as they say. First of all, let me just comment on this. Is this from the New York Times Magazine?
One of them.
This, right. One of them. One of their many. Yeah. One of their many magazines. Mm-hmm. There's this big piece in the New York Times Magazine. It's their trend spotting section, and it's called "Where the Shoe Doesn't Fit." And apparently, it's a whole article about it's like a photo essay about places in the country where folks go barefoot. And right here, Reed College,
one of two colleges that does that.
Students at Occidental College in Los Angeles and Reed College in Portland, Oregon, pad around without shoes, not just on grass, but in classrooms, the gym, and the cafeteria, because that's where you want to eat lunch. It's a big room full of shoeless
men and cave women.
Shoeless, hairy-legged, stinking hippies. You know what I'm talking about. I'm surprised they don't go shoeless at that. What is that fake college they have? Is that in Washington, that Evergreen College, where you can make up your own grade?
Never heard of it.
Oh, no. I'm pretty sure it's in Washington State. It's one of those, like, pseudo... It's like one of those Ken Kesey colleges.
That's
not
the one that Clyde works at.
No. Would you be interested in a fake college where you can give yourself a grade? Press 2.
No.
There's some... No, it's not... No, it's a four-year college, supposedly, in Washington State. I'm pretty sure it's called Evergreen University, Evergreen College. And when I was growing up in Washington, that was where all of the hippie trippy art, you know, the paint thinner sniffing kids all wanted to go, because you could get a degree from there, but it was some sort of weird free your mind, expanded consciousness, cleanse the doors of perception, stupid school, where at the end of the class, you could just, like at the end of the semester or the term or whatever, you could just give yourself whatever grade you thought you deserved. And so everybody just longed to go there. And it was a whole bunch of classes specializing in things that, like, what is this? Well, it's a class in, like, pastel charcoal sketching or whatever. Just, like, crap you could never use. But it was an easy way to get a degree and just stay stoned for 4 years. All right, here's what's coming up today. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. And I'm going to continue to call her Lisa Goddard well into her marriage, by the way.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to give it, like, three.
I believe there's going to be some sort of probationary, some sort of trial period. Well after she is married to Jason Sporbert and they pick this hideous new French name that they've decided on, or that he has decided on, or that she has gone along with, I think I'm going to give it like 90 days where I just continue to call her Lisa Goddard, just give her a chance to kind of pull the escape cord on the whole thing.
Why can't you have a hyphenated name?
Because hyphenated names are stupid. I mean,
You don't know which hyphenated name to use.
Well, and it's, you know, pick a goddamn name. Hyphenated names irritate me. You know what I mean? I mean, at least Peter Carlin, it's just more work. And here's a question. I really honestly don't understand this. Here's a question I have for you, Tim Riley.
Yes.
It's not like it's not like I spend my life being angry about hyphenated names. It just seems pointless. Just pick a friggin' name. Make up a new name. Doesn't matter to me. You don't have to take the husband's name. It's like my brother. You know, the big tough guy that he is, he picked his wife's name. You know, fine with me. Doesn't matter. It just seems like less paperwork, less things, you know, fewer things you have to memorize. My question to you is, okay, so if you get married and then you have a hyphenated last name, mm-hmm. and then you have kids, do they take the hyphenated last name?
I would imagine so, if that's your legal name.
And so then if you are the daughter of a woman with a hyphenated last name, and then you yourself get married, do you just end up having, I mean, does it become, because you know you see Latin names like that.
Yeah.
Where it literally just goes on forever. It's like a Ricky Tiki Tumbo No Sirembo kind of a thing, and it fills up half a page with the last names. So if you have hyphenated names, do you drop one if you then get married to another man? You know, if you're a daughter, it just makes no sense at all. The whole thing is just mystifying. It's filled with all kinds of arcane methodology that I don't understand. Anyway, just pick a goddamn name. I don't even know what I was talking about now. Blah, 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 Lisa Goddard. So we'll talk to her about this, you know, this Pat Tillman thing, which continues to just... I mean, we're probably on the 15th investigation of Pat Tillman by now. It was at 7 yesterday. We're probably into the double digits. We'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy about O.J. Simpson. And here's the... This story just unfolds every single day. I swear to God, every day since that guy was acquitted, there's been a different fold in this O.J. story. There's been some new wrinkle in this. So yesterday, we had the news that Fred Goldman won the rights to this O.J. Simpson book. And so I swear to you, that news wasn't even 2-3 hours old when O.J. had booked some 3-hour interview somewhere. And so O.J. did this phone-in interview last night. I guess it was on some internet TV station or something. Like, it wasn't a real show. It was on the internet.
Yeah.
And he was like some phone-in, like, call in now with your questions for the juice. And I have some audio from that. And it's not like fake, wacky morning DJ audio. It's real audio from this O.J. Simpson interview he did last night, which is hilarious.
I'm afraid to watch that. I've read about it.
Why?
Oh. It looks so terrible.
Oh, it's
actually
awful.
But he's a horrible person. So
no, but F. O.J. Yeah, I'm all broken up about O.J. and his awkward interview. Because it's just one prank call after another. I mean, there's not a single... I didn't watch the entire hour-long interview because I just don't care that much. But thankfully, TMZ is there to do the work for me. So they edited it like the greatest hits of O.J.'s interview last night down into about 90 seconds. And it's gold. It's gold. Let's see, what else do we have? Steve Kastenbaum will join us today. We'll talk about the iPhone. And it's basically another excuse for me to talk to him about this book by Jonathan Mahler, which I'm reading, called The Bronx is Burning, which really is a fantastic book. And not the best book I've ever read, but it really is wonderful. It's an amazing book. It really is. If you are at all interested in the culture of New York City, especially in the late 70s, which I kind of am, you really ought to read it. It's great. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the iPhone. Mr. Skin will join us today. We have a clergy watch, which is off the charts wonderful. Tim and I both came into the studio separately this morning, and it was like some sort of a parent trap twin kind of a thing. We're both like, did you see the story? You know, both at the same time. So we got the clergy watch, religious nutcase watch, our hunt for the second worst story in the history of the world, and Scotty J will present the top 5 70s slow dance songs of all time. Top 5 70s slow dance songs.
He was kind of panicking this morning, too.
Well, he's had like a day and a half to put it together. Is he panicking because he's just agonizing over song choice, or because he got drunk and didn't do his work?
Well, he's asking me, he's like, I don't really know what you mean by slow songs. Are they slow songs that you'd hear on the radio, or slow songs that you dance to at a dance?
You're overthinking it. Just slow dance songs. What do you suppose that means? Slow dance, those are all one-syllable words. All right. No, it's 70, like if you were to a school dance where John Astin was trying to keep the Jets and the Sharks from fighting. You're some sort of school dance, you know, and they have a disco ball, and they have, purple streamers or whatever, and then they play songs, and you go and you find what is it you people would say, Scott, a foxy lady to dance with? What are the top 5 songs to which you and said fine lady would dance? There you go. Yes. Yes, that too. All right. So we'll get to all of that. All of that is coming up today. And we got this other pile of news over here. More Hanford news, by the way. Your phone calls and more. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm having a wonderful day.
Well, good to hear. Is that because you had an exhilarating bike ride into work?
No, it is not. And I'm picking up. I'm picking up on your car.
I actually didn't
know that.
No. Well, I saw your car in the parking lot.
Yeah. No, I drove
too because I have to be somewhere.
I don't have to be anywhere. I don't have to be anywhere. I have to be sitting in my car, my lame American ass later. You know, the thing is, I thought it was going to be... when I looked out the window this morning, it seemed like it was very, very, like there was a lot of wind, and it seemed like there was a bit of a chill in the air. And then by the time I drove into work today, I swear to God, it was like 104 degrees or something by the time I rolled into the parking lot.
Be, I think,
it's
got to
be 92 degrees under sunny skies.
That's wonderful. And I'm in that truck with no air conditioning. That'll be great. That's my instant karma right there. That's my karma this afternoon. No, I biked Monday and Tuesday, and I did not bike today. So that's my fault for being lame. So, and, you know, I got nothing. And my wife's out of town, so I got this whole... So she's like, she's not even there to put the guilt trip on me. Like, I've just got no motivation. There's not even a passive gun to my head making me bike into work. So I'll try to bike again tomorrow. But
okay.
It just didn't. I'm just zen with it. I'm not going to make excuses. I'm lazy. What do you want from my life?
So. I'll have to be somewhere where I have to look semi-decent at 4 o'clock. And I don't want to be a hot, like, sweaty mess by the time I get home after pedaling up that hill.
Semi-decent. Where do you have to be that requires you to only be semi-decent?
Oh, my other little part-time gig that I have.
Oh, I see. Oh, at the shoe porn place?
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic.
Shoe porn? That sounds bad.
You know what I'm talking about. All right, Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
And there's a lot here. An alligator, a live one, is captured in Longview. A woman is rescued after being pinned under a boulder on Mount Hood for some 5 hours.
Boulder?
Mm-hmm. A heroic Southeast Portland woman fights off an attacker with a sword. The KGW news copter gets in the way of firefighting crews, and many are unhappy. Bally's Total Fitness is bankrupt. A record number of Americans are resettling in Canada. The war in Iraq could cost $1 trillion. Dick Cheney admits he was wrong. Well, maybe only once. And it's official. Whoopi Goldberg is joining The View.
Seriously.
O.J. claims his murder book is ghostwritten and full of mistakes. And it's going to be 92 degrees today under mostly sunny skies.
Thanks for that. By the way, for those of you who are heading to my hometown of Kennewick, yesterday we had an article about Hanford nuclear waste. Today we have a second one. Michael Milstein of The Oregonian reports... Federal officials traced a spill of highly radioactive nuclear waste of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation last week to a water line that was never intended to handle such a hazardous concoction. Now here comes the money sentence. Attempts to unclog a pump which was plugged by nuclear waste as thick as chunky peanut butter inadvertently forced the sludge from an aging underground tank into the water line, which then that's exactly where you want nuclear waste like peanut butter sludge to go, is right into a water line. Into a water line which then sprang a leak, spilling 100 gallons of the highly radioactive sludge into the ground. It was the worst spill at Hanford in recent years, as federal workers and hired contractors try to empty 149 deteriorating underground tanks filled with waste from the dawn of the nuclear age. Nearly half of the 149 tanks are leaking. Of the 149 leaking tanks of nuclear waste, only 7 have been fixed. There you go.
Enjoy your trip to Kennewick.
All right, 503-733-2970. Before we proceed with anything else here, hello, sir. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hi.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
But on the hyphenated name thing, my wife did that when we got married in 93. So she named our firstborn son Olson, whatever, and it didn't dawn on me later that he would be the male on her side of the family. So that's why she did that, I guess. That's one reason why you would.
I don't really understand anything you just said. So start again.
My wife... hyphenated her name when we got married.
Okay, so you got married, and your wife you kept both names with the hyphen.
Exactly.
When did that start? Is that a thing that first came to prominence with Hillary Rodham Clinton?
Well, I thought she was just trying to be cachet or something.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, she wasn't Hillary Rodham Clinton for a long time. She was just Hillary Clinton. When did she become Hillary Rodham Clinton?
Now she's just Hillary. She has no last
name. That's true. I hadn't thought about that.
I think if she
has a last name on it, you'd be hard-pressed to do so.
Good culture spotting, Tim Riley.
Darn right. That's my job.
She's like Beyonce now.
Yeah. You see, Hillary, you know who it is.
No, that's true. I can't, except for Hillary Swank, I can't, and Hillary Duff. Those are the only other two.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another Hillary.
No?
All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So your wife had both names with a hyphen for some reason, and then what?
Yeah, and I thought it was silly.
Yes.
So anyway, there will be no more males with her name, family's last name on her side of the family, and that's why she named up her son that. Use the hyphenated name.
Sarah, do you understand what the point he's making?
No.
All right. Thank
I'm
you.
Trying.
Trying to continue the bloodline on her side of the family, I guess is what I'm saying. The family name.
All right.
No more males.
Let me ask you this. Here's the only thing I really care about. If you and your wife, and she, again, had a hyphenated last name, if you had had a daughter and then the daughter got married to somebody, would she then have to have, like, four names?
Her daughter, my name.
All right. It's all very confusing. Thank you.
Well, you don't necessarily have to keep your original name when you get married.
It just seems like more work than it's worth. You know what I mean? It just, I mean, I understand throwing off the patriarchy and so forth, but seriously, just do it, you know, just choose a goddamn name. All right. Let's see here. Oh, now people who went to Evergreen College are just sending me hate mail now. It's amazing they know how to use computers. All right, what are we doing here? I'm done with that section. Before we do anything else, let me just say this. I went home last night, and this is the what I did last night section of the intro. I go home, and I'm walking my dog. And so my neighbor Megan is out, and she has her dog as well. And let me just, as a side note, so there I am walking my dog, who is, you know, he is a poodle. I mean, he's a poodle, and he weighs, you know, he weighs like 9 pounds. But he has this whole thing where he just feels the need to act aggressive towards dogs that are like 100 times his size. And this is not a dog anecdote. It's just a little side note. Because it's just ridiculous. We'll pass, there's these, on our street, there are these German shepherds, and they're behind a chain link fence. And of course, the dogs are behind a chain link fence where they could not possibly endanger him or threaten him. And so when we pass by, he just has to bark his stupid poodle head off like
God, so does Muppet.
Like he's going to start something. Like he's going to get up all in their business or whatever. So I went by, and Megan and I had a good neighborly coffee clatch about this allegation that we live in a duplex on opposite sides of a duplex. We were both sitting there just being, and she said that she was texting you actually during yesterday's discussion of whether or not Rick lives in a duplex. My hot neighbor Megan says, she's like, and I was sending Sarah many text messages during the program. Did she ask you to come by and look at it and like witness how it's not a duplex?
She really did, but I've been to your house before and I know that it is in fact a duplex.
It's really not, but thank you. I appreciate you trying to...
See, if you had more faith in it, then you would actually be willing to call your landlord, but you don't want to call and pot a little.
Well, I don't want to... The only reason I don't want to call my landlord about it is, A, and he's a nice guy. He really is a great guy. But as I think we've discovered with certain people on this program, sometimes there are people who get the vibe. Well, first of all, I don't think he knows that this is what I do. I think he thinks that I'm just unemployed.
Didn't you have to say what you did when you started renting, or how long ago was that?
Maybe. I don't even remember. I don't know that I've ever actually told him. Not like I hide it, but I don't think I've ever actually told him what I do. And I don't, unless my wife told him, I just don't know that you'd ever really figure it out. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But I don't really know that he would get the general tone of the program. Our show does have a unique bent to its humor. And it seems like it might be a bad idea to bring my landlord on and then ask him some question which he might deem to be insulting. Especially since we were talking about whether I live in a duplex yesterday and we looked up the property records. And we noted that the property records for the city indicate that it is a duplex even though it is clearly not.
Oh, and yeah. So that's why they're records.
I'm just saying. But then Tim noted that that might be a property tax thing. And I am sure that isn't... I'm sure it's entirely on the up and up. I'm sure there's no improprieties going on, but... Just to be on the safe side, seems like I might want to not bring him on the air and interrogate him about the property records for housing that he owns. It seems like that might end badly. And so my wife, you know, I don't want my wife to come home from out of town and I'm living on the corner inside a Maytag box. I really would like for that not to happen, so we're not going to do that. We probably have to break here, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we have somebody at
the party. I haven't even played the OJ thing, and I haven't even talked to Scotty here at the top of the program. Well... Damn it. Damn it all to hell. All right. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back with Lisa Goddard around the corner. Later on, Steve Kastenbaum, Tim Riley at the noon news hour, the second worst story ever, Scotty J, the top five slow dance songs from the 70s, and Ed McCarthy. Stay right. I don't even bathe. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Like that thing my wife said to you. I brush my teeth sometimes.
It's We're classy folks.
Really, we are. 503-733-2970. So I'm getting people sending me equations. Rick plus Southeast Portland plus duplex. Duplex plus rent equals white trash. Deal with it and move on, Rick. Right. You know, Megan had an interesting observation, though. She noted, and I don't know that this is the case, but it sounds correct. Megan noted that we cannot possibly live in a duplex because duplexes were a mid-20th century invention, that they did not, in fact, exist at the time that our houses were built. So
no, that's total BS because I live in a fourplex now.
I don't even know.
No, I live in a fourplex, and my house is built in 1900.
Oh, okay, but that, no, but that's not the same thing.
Things can be converted.
That's not the same thing. They have not, it was one house, and they've just simply remodeled the interior of it into four houses.
No, that's not at all the same thing. I believe there's a connecting part of your house at some point.
Well, there's a connecting part. Well, there's a connecting part. It's called a roof. But the houses themselves do not touch. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. All I'm saying is that matter of public record, it says it's a duplex.
I like how you trust the government when it's convenient for you,
Sarah.
I'm
not trusting the government, but really, who has the last word? If it's in public documents and it is noted that it is, in fact, a duplex, who are you to say that it's not?
So tempting just to dump this entire conversation. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN radio correspondent to the stars. For the stars, Lisa Goddard. Hi there. How you doing?
Hi, guys. Are duplex versus townhouse versus row house?
I don't even know what a row house is. I think that's like an East Coast only thing. What is a row house?
It might be. I think it's essentially it's a certain kind of looking townhouse.
Row house sounds like something that a speech epitomized Patrick Swayze fan would be into.
Oh.
Is a row house what Archie and Edith Bunker lived in?
I don't know what their front porch looked like. It's possible.
Now,
often there's a porch, a connecting, some kind of very small place for people to sit and hang out. Sit on the stairs.
You know what I miss? I miss the days of flop houses. I don't even know that those exist anymore. Are there still flop houses anywhere?
I feel strongly that there are.
I mean, you do live near Baltimore, sort of. So, I mean, I guess if there are going to be any, they might be there. That's one of those things that I only hear referenced in, like, Depression era, dime novels or something. So,
when do you think, like, the last poor farm went out of business?
The last what?
Poor farm.
What is that?
Poor farm, they used to have the people that were poor, that were in debt, couldn't pay off their bills. They had to go to the poor farm.
Hold on. Tim Riley is here. I believe he knows something about row houses. Hello, sir.
I live in a row house, so they're not exclusive to the East Coast.
Outstanding.
Now, what is it? Now, what is a row house? What is the definition
of a row house is a townhouse in which you own the land and the building.
Okay. Fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Tim, by the way, is our local real estate magnate.
Wow. So other townhouses, you don't actually own the land?
They would be condos.
So a townhouse, let me understand this. So we were looking at this sort of genealogically. So a townhouse, so both row houses and condos are townhouses. But the difference is that you rent a condo and you own a row house.
In a condo, you own the space. You don't own the actual building.
Oh, but you own the land underneath it if it's a townhouse.
Correct. It's possible.
But so in your case, you could theoretically, if you wanted to, you could just raise your townhouse and just put up like a Wiener Schnitzel stand or something there. The land.
Right, but I cannot put whatever I want on the land because I have to abide by the homeowners association rules.
Oh, you belong to one of those places where they tell you what paint you can put on your house.
But it sounds like a row house and a townhouse are kind of the same thing under your definition.
Possibly.
It's simply a matter, I believe it's a matter of ownership then. It's a matter of whether or not you own the underpinning land.
So you would own that in a townhouse as well as a row house, is my point.
Boy, we suddenly turned into like a really bad, like, KFI weekend show right now. Seriously. All we need is like some bad synthesizer music and then the Garden Line show to come on after this. Let's pretend this entire conversation never happened. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, Tim is our resident real estate magnate and slumlord here on the Rick Emerson Show, so he can answer all those questions. He's really the only grown-up on this program. All right, let's talk about, just moving from the ridiculous to the depressing. Let's talk about this Pat Tillman thing. Is it true?
Yes.
I mean, it must be true because I was, reading the government's own statements about it, but it does not seem conceivable that we're on the seventh investigation of Pat Tillman being killed in Afghanistan. How is that even possible?
No, that is true. That is true, but that is including five in the military, two outside the military. Those are congressional investigations.
Well, I don't want to be boiling things down into an oversimplistic state, but seriously, why does it take seven investigations to figure out who shot somebody?
That's the question everyone's asking. Well, here's the thing. There was an initial investigation. There were three initial investigations to figure out basically what happened. How was he shot? Who killed him? What happened? Now, after the third investigation, it was glaringly clear that the first investigation got it wrong. And when initially it was said that Pat Tillman was killed by enemy fire, and then it was clear it was not by enemy fire. So by the third investigation, it was clear there were problems at the beginning. So then they launched an investigation of why that happened. Who is it that said, who got it wrong? Who is it that didn't tell the family the truth. What happened there? So it just, and then that became such a hot button that while that fourth investigation was going on, a fifth investigation was simultaneously launched in the Department of Defense as well. And then, of course, it snowballed, and there became outside investigations. Congress is still, in a way, going through its investigation, and that's basically how
well,
it
happened. Well, this is a really...
The first three were just your basic what happened. It took three investigations to put that together.
I mean, I'm no criminologist or anything, but it does seem like... Look, if the cops are investigating some crime somewhere and you got a bullet-ridden body, they pull out the ammunition, they pull out the bullet or the slug or whatever is that killed the guy, and they say, well, look, this came from this kind of gun, and then they try to match it to a specific type of barrel or whatever that it came out of.
Right, right.
Are you telling me that it was just impossible for them to do that with Pat Tillman? There was just no way to identify what kind of gun it came from, or was it just that? Is this another instance where we are selling weapons to everybody in the world, and so then it's impossible to identify who shot somebody?
You know, that did play a role, the weaponry. But in the end, it was the weaponry that helped them determine exactly who shot him. But there was a potential that a similar type of weapon could have been used by enemies in the area. But pretty quickly, the details came in together within a week of the death, which I know doesn't sound all that quick, but considering the area of Afghanistan where this happened and that it was a secret mission, within a week, they figured out that it was, in fact, U.S. weaponry, that it was his platoon, and they figured out the details that the platoon was split up, one on one side of a very large hill and the other on the other side, and that they didn't realize their radios weren't working, so they couldn't communicate, that, you know, the sounds they were hearing from either side of the hill was actually their same platoon. So, you know, that's how they established how the confusion happened, essentially, and that it was U.S. gunfire pretty quickly.
Well, so let's just cut to the chase here. So did somebody go out of their way to cover all this information up?
The Pentagon said yesterday that, indeed, there was one lieutenant general who they believe did deceive everyone else, that he was, this is Lieutenant General Philip Kenzinger, that he was the man who, for some reason, according to them, was not honest, and that he made mistakes in the initial investigation, and that he later covered that up, his mistakes, and he was trying to cover up his problems. They don't think it was a general cover-up, like someone killing Pat Tillman and trying to pretend like it was enemy fire, but they say this one lieutenant general dropped the ball and then tried to cover his own behind by failing to admit that what had really happened. Now, Kenzinger, for his part, denies that. He says that's not true at all. He says he did the best job he could and that he was forthright and everything. However, it looks like he is on the fast track to getting a demotion. He's retired. So he could go from 3 stars to 2. You might think that's not a big deal if you're retired, but it would mean about $900 a month.
Well, and it's handy that they pinned it on the guy who's retired, who, you know, I mean, that sort of works. And I don't mean to sound overly cynical about this, but really...
He really was head guy in the investigation.
I mean, if there have been 7 different investigations of the Pat Tillman thing, only to come to the conclusion that there was a guy who was covering everything up, I really have no reason to believe that this 7th investigation uncovered the real truth. You know what I mean?
That's the question. And at one point, Secretary Rumsfeld himself wrote a memo saying, after the 4th investigation, he said, do we really think the Army should be the ones doing the 5th investigation?
Yeah.
So even Secretary Rumsfeld said, this is ridiculous. We obviously, the Army, after 4 investigations, perhaps we need someone outside that can do it, can look at it. But in the end, the Army still did take on that 5th investigation, and then now it's Congress that's looking. And, of course, there are a lot of questions, especially about the proximity of the bullet wounds in Pat Tillman's head.
Well, there was like 3 wounds within a very close area of one,
very
of
tight,
one another.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there are questions of whether that really could have happened from friendly fire that was supposedly...
That was unintentional.
A bit farther away, unintentional, exactly. And, of course, today we heard from Secretary Rumsfeld in this hearing. We also heard from members of Congress who seem to have gotten briefings. I'm not quite clear where they're getting this information from, but who say that Pat Tillman does deserve his hero status because he responded to the gunfire. It's unclear if he knew it was friendly fire or enemy fire, but he responded to the gunfire in a way to try and protect the unit he was with, that he stood up, kind of tried to get in the way of potential fire in order to protect the rest of the members of his platoon. Now, even that's not quite clear the Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and others didn't completely agree with that today. They said they don't know that that's not true, but everyone's being so ridiculously careful on this now.
Right.
It is hard to say we will ever get any more real facts that we can sink our teeth into and feel confident in at this point.
Well, that's great.
I feel like, down the road, when they, 20 years from now, when they release all these documents and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I remember that case, maybe then we'll really see some information. But for right now, they're saying, you know, completely the mistake of this one guy and his subordinates who followed his lead, and that it was a huge factor that Pat Tillman was so high profile and all of that. But they say Rumsfeld, all those guys, the White House, didn't have anything to do with it.
All right. As always, it's a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon, Lisa. Thank you.
There you go. CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard
from The Hill. Fantastic. All right. No time today to press her on what kind of conversation she had with Jason Sporbert.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I wanted to, but we got to poor Steve Kastenbaum. I can't. I should have known that this Pat Tillman thing would go long, but I can't bump everything yet 2 days in a row. And it's probably best that I let it lie for a day so we don't do 2 days of piling on her poor fiancé. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson program. From the city that never sleeps, the one, the only, Steve Kastenbaum, New York City's CNN correspondent. Hi, Steve, how you doing?
Pretty good. Were you just talking about Lisa Goddard's fiancé? I just joined you there, Dwight.
Yes, we were.
Ah.
Have you met him?
No, I haven't met him, but it's funny because Lisa's getting married, I'm getting married this year, and then a couple of other folks at CNN Radio have also either gotten married or are getting married this year.
Something in the water. If I can ask you now, this is a personal question. Now, does your fiancé plan to keep her name, take your name, do the hyphenated thing? What's going to happen with her name?
Keeping her name.
Okay.
No hyphenated or anything like that.
See how clean and simple that is? You don't have to change any paperwork. You don't have to alter anything. You don't have to send out some email to all 9 million people in your address book saying, by the way, you need to call me Fortescue from now on. There's just no, you don't have to do it. That is the way to go, my friend.
So, yeah, it's easy that way. And we're still pretty independent. So this way, we keep our independence alive.
That way to be a 21st century man, Steve Kastenbaum. Good for you.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, by the way, just before we talk about the iPhone here, I got to say that I am not done with the book, but I have finished. I have come to the end in The Bronx is Burning, which I reference, although I feel justified in doing so because it is also, as we speak, an 8-part miniseries that's airing on ESPN. So I know there's a lot of guys out there who are watching the miniseries of this book that I am reading. And, of course, once I'm done with the book, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch the miniseries, which stars John Turturro and a bunch of other guys. My poor wife, who had to be up at like 4 in the morning this morning, she was leaving town. I'm sitting there in bed with my blazing bedside lamp going until 1 in the morning because I'm trying to, I'm so enraptured by this book. And it's by Jonathan Mahler, and I just finished the section about the 1977 blackout.
Isn't that great?
Jesus. I mean, it's the blackout, and then he sort of dovetails that by talking about this plague of arson that went through the Brunswick neighborhood, the Bushwick neighborhood in New York during that same era. But this 77 blackout, I mean, that is one of the most harrowing things I have ever read, especially the section. For those who don't know, I'll just give a little brief backstory, because the 30th anniversary was just 2 weeks ago.
Right.
It was July 13th. He does this moment by moment, almost chronology, where they describe lightning in about a 10-minute period. Two strikes of lightning hit some Con Ed sort of outposts, and they follow just this instant by instant chronology of this one lone guy who is sitting there in the Con Ed master control room. With this whole array of switches and buttons and dials and knobs and levers in front of him, and how he just, as he saw the power grid starting to crash in front of him, completely froze, didn't know what to do, couldn't figure out how to proceed, did nothing, and plunged all 5 boroughs of New York City into just complete and utter abject darkness on one of the hottest days of the year. And then it lasted for what? How long did the blackout last?
Couple of days before they got everybody back up. I remember in my neighborhood we were without power for, I think, 2 days.
And so where were you living at the time?
I was living in a neighborhood in Brooklyn called Midwood, which is literally, like, geographically almost right in the center of the borough. And it's a pretty middle-class neighborhood, blue-collar and white-collar families, that sort of thing. It's almost suburban-like. It's hard to believe that it's part of New York City when you live there, but it's... It was crazy because we knew all this crime was sweeping over the city, especially in Bushwick, which wasn't that far away. And so I remember my grandfather owned the neighborhood donut shop, and he stayed in the donut shop along with his baker and a couple of baseball bats and stood watch over their donut shop overnight and that sort of thing, because everybody heard what was going on in Bushwick, except for some folks. Did you read the part about, you know, my former employer, 1010 Winds News, what was going on in the radio station while all hell was breaking loose in Bushwick? They were talking about how there was a party-like festive atmosphere on Park Avenue.
Right, right. And on Park Avenue, the only way that it really negatively impacted Park Avenue is at restaurants they had to move the tables out onto the sidewalk where it was cooler because the air conditioning was down. Meanwhile, you've got these neighborhoods where there's, they talked about guys where there was 120,000 people to patrol. There's 30 cops who were there.
Right.
And guys who would literally back up their truck to like a gun shop or a pawn shop. They would back up their truck. They would take a chain from their trailer hitch to those gates that come down over it, and they would just pull the gate right off the front of the gun store. And he talked at one point about these cops who are in the middle of this blackout, and it's pitch black, it's hot, it's stifling, there's fog, there's smoke because there's buildings burning everywhere. These cops marching into this sea of thousands of people, dimly aware that there are these gun stores that have been ransacked everywhere, and just cops hearing gunfire, guns going off, not knowing, and being told to take their badges off because the badges are enough reflection that there were snipers using them as targets, as these cops are wading into this sea of humanity. Just reading the book, it was incredibly disturbing. I can't even imagine how harrowing it would have been to live through that. You talk about your relatives guarding this donut shop. I mean, they're talking about one guy who stayed in his store for like 36 hours with a gun, holding off these looters who were bent on ransacking his store. At the end of 36 hours, he leaves for 20 minutes to get a sandwich, and he comes back, and the store is picked clean, just empty.
Yeah. And the cops having, you know, basically no effect on these people at all, and the holding cell in the local precinct house was packed to capacity, body to body, you know, within minutes, and they just didn't know what to do with everybody, and there was no communications going on because, you know, the power was out, and so headquarters didn't even know at first how bad it was in Bushwick, and all because this one idiot didn't isolate New York City from the rest of the grid. All these other utilities in New Jersey and in Westchester and surrounding areas, Long Island, were also watching on their boards. They could see what was going on, that the power lines were overloading and that New York City was going to cause a major blackout in the whole Northeast if this guy didn't separate himself from the grid soon. And one by one, they were all calling him, telling him, you got to take New York down. You got to take New York down now. And he just froze.
How many, at that time in 1977, all five boroughs, how many people were living in New York?
It was around 7 million, somewhere between 7 and 7.5 million.
Just the idea, and this happened at night. The idea of 7 million people, just suddenly the power is turned off, and the guy, as he described it, he said that literally, except for the red blinking airplane lights at the top of Citibank and the World Trade Center, and the Statue of Liberty's torch, every single light in New York was off. And, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would look like. I try, and there are probably pictures of this, although I don't even really know how you would take such a picture now that I think about it, a picture of the New York skyline with the lights off. I can't even imagine how freaky that must have been to look out, and you see the New York City skyline entirely dark.
It was really scary. I remember because we went out, you know, one day we stayed home. We didn't venture off the block. And then finally we walked the next day to the shopping avenue sort of in our neighborhood. And I just remember how dangerous it was just crossing a street because everybody was still out in their cars, and there were all these store owners who had the gates of their stores down and were behind the gates sort of protecting their property in my neighborhood. And fortunately, where I lived, we were fortunate that there wasn't really much crime. But, we knew what was going on in neighboring areas, and it was definitely scary. And I think it took my neighborhood 2 days for the power to come back up, but I could be wrong because it was such a long time ago. But it was a real crazy time in New York because the city was trying to come out of bankruptcy. You had the Son of Sam murders going on. You had all the drama going on with Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin with the Yankees. And then this blackout happened in the middle of the hottest summer on record.
I mean, it's just, it's unreal. And that, and it's, you know, and I don't know a lot about New York. I've been to New York probably 5 or 6 times. And so I have, you know, kind of a layman's knowledge of it. But even, you know, folks like myself who haven't really spent much time there are aware of how different New York of today is from then, you know, and that was a period when Times Square was just one big red light district. It was nothing but hookers and porn stores. Times Square was certainly not a place where tourists or families ever went. And there's this picture in the middle of the book, or they the picture section, where they show the inside of a typical, what they describe as a typical New York City subway car in 1977, and it's just wrecked.
It's disgusting. It's just, I remember being on the subway, and you actually could not see out the windows because they were covered in graffiti from head to toe in some cases, because they just gave up. They literally just gave up on the public transit system in the 70s in New York, and sort of had to rebuild it car by car on the subway over years, well over a decade, you know, once they started getting federal funding again. But they literally had given up because they felt so many people were leaving the city that there was no reason to maintain the subway system in good working order, and they didn't have enough money to do so even if they wanted to. So the one thing that they let go by the wayside was the cleaning of the subway stations and of the cars, and it was disgusting.
Because there was just a sense in New York at that time that there was sort of a throwing their hands up, right? Like, you know, it was like a triage, just sections that you were just going to amputate because they weren't going to. The fascinating, and I was thinking about you, Sarah, during this section. I was reading this book, and they were talking about the Soho area, and it's a whole section, you can't even conceive this now, but they were talking about the Soho area and how it had just been abandoned, written off. They figured it was just, you know, there was no point, you know, to anything there. And so you had these artists who would go in, and these, you know, these starving artists and painters and jazz musicians who would be able to rent 2 entire floors in some building for like $200 a month. And that's where they lived. They talked about one guy who bought an entire multi-story building in Soho for like $58,000 because it had just been written off.
A lot of areas were, and highways were literally crumbling. You know, we used to have a highway on the west side of New York. Now the highway doesn't begin until like 57th Street, which is about midway up the island. But we used to have a highway that ran the entire length of the west side along the Hudson River, and that was the West Side Highway. And it literally crumbled. I mean, there were holes that you could see through the surface down until the through to the ground below, and eventually they just condemned it and they tore it down.
It's just amazing. In a weird, perverse kind of way, I wish there was a way to almost experience that. The subway thing is particularly haunting to me for some reason, because I've ridden New York subways a lot in sort of the recent times. But I just to go back and just, you see it depicted in films, like you go back and you watch The Warriors or whatever, and there's, you know, they depict it as being this just this urban jungle. But it's just so far removed from the reality of New York today. Although Tim Riley just handed this to me from the news department on the front of today's New York Times. There's that article about Bloomberg, who continually is talking about how he's, you know, he's a guy who rides the subway, but apparently they've now revealed that he's driven there by an SUV, and so actually the bulk of his transit is actually in a private SUV every day.
It's really funny because they questioned him about that today during his news conference, and he sort of, you know, brushed it off, saying that there are requirements that the police department puts on him for security reasons, and they, you know, they won't let him walk the 22 blocks or whatever it is, and even when he takes the subway, which he does ride the subway from the Upper East Side or the East Side to work to City Hall. At least when he's at City Hall, he rides the subway every morning. He really does do this, but that the SUV is waiting for him when he gets out, and it's up there when he gets in.
Yeah.
And he says that, you know, the police department's requirements, if he could have it his way, they wouldn't be doing that.
I know we're real over time here, but I should ask you about this iPhone business, because that was the sort of aegis under which we had you on the program today. But this is, it's not really a huge story, because it is just sort of the same thing they've been doing with the iPod for a long time, right? Whereas you buy the iPod, and of course, and the iPod is not, you know, they are not alone in this. My MP3 player, which is made by Creative, is the same thing, where it's not just a regular AA battery or whatever. It's like some battery that is bolted in there, and then when the battery goes belly up, you're on the hook for however many hundreds of dollars to replace it, right?
Check this out. You pay $499 for a base. Why don't they just say $500? Why do they do that?
That's a psychological thing, I think.
I hate that. You pay $500 for the basic iPhone, and then you find out in 2 or 3 years, if you use it a lot and you recharge it a lot, that the battery needs to be replaced because it's not holding its charge. And all of a sudden, you're whacked with an $80 replacement fee. And you have to send the phone back to Apple.
Oh, you can't just go into like a store?
No. That's what's so terrible. It's not like, you know, some other cell phones and units where you can take the back off and just buy a replacement battery. That's where they get you. You have to send it back to iPhone. So this device that's supposed to replace everything in your life, and you put your entire life on it.
And then you're without it for like 10 days.
Without it for a while. I mean, supposedly they give you a replacement phone, but in some cases the replacement phone won't be free. It depends on what you're sending it back for. So that'll cost you another $29 for the loaner phone. And so, you know, they get you.
All that's missing from this story is Steve Jobs, like, twirling a handlebar mustache and tying someone to a railroad track. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, my friend. Thank you for spending so much time with us today. I know that we're way over time with this, so enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you soon, Steve.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Steve Kastenbaum, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. All right. Tim Riley, have ye prepared news for us?
Oh, yes. I've been working diligently.
It's a glorious day. It will resume next. Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time you've been waiting for. It's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
You imagine being stuck underneath a boulder on Mount Hood? What could be worse? A woman has been freed from that precarious position and had her leg pinned for 5 hours. A person hiked for an hour and a half down to McNeil Point to get help, saying a woman was trapped under a big boulder weighing about a ton. And she appeared to be in shock, as any of us would be.
Seriously. Because you're hiking along, and then the next thing you know, you're just you're all wily coyoted.
Mm-hmm. They were able to move the boulder off her neck with good old...
Off her neck?
I'm sorry, her leg.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that would be uncomfortable.
That would be. Off her leg, and discovered her foot was broken. The woman was conscious and breathing. She's between 18 and 19 years old. A group of friends said they were hiking with her. The trail along McNeil Point is popular. It has some incredible views, but it's also steep and strenuous. The woman was about 3 miles... Up the trail, and then the gully taking pictures of the boulder that was 5 feet wide rolled under her foot.
Throw me the idol, I throw you the whip.
Hmm? The trails are very narrow, they're very unstable. People sign off them, it's a bad area.
I don't think the trails are the only thing that are unstable, Tim.
Perhaps not.
Don't get off. Seriously, these are my parting words. So often now that it's just become a thing, one of my in-house catchphrases at home. When my wife goes camping, I tell her, you stay on the trail or else I'm going to have no sympathy when you're killed by something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's inevitable. She'll be killed by something. Would you do? There'd be the cougar, grizzly, mountain lion, Ebola, typhus, whatever. But at least you want to die with some sort of dignity.
Yes.
You don't want to die like some sort of idiot that's standing in a dry riverbed when an avalanche of stones comes down and turns you into a paste, all because you wanted to get some interesting photograph of a shrub. So just, you know.
Aren't there videos available to see the same thing?
To
watch from the comfort of your own home.
Really? Yeah. I mean,
spectacular views of Mount Hood.
Honestly, you could turn on National Geographic right now and probably see that, all without having your legs shattered in several pieces.
Breathtaking fauna and flora.
And it's amazing how three little words can just change the entire bent of a story. You know, we were all feeling bad and sympathetic for her until we heard the words, off the trail.
Mm.
So.
And it's an youthful indiscretion being 18 or 19 years old.
Yes.
There were things for kids that age to be doing, I suppose. They've captured an alligator in a pond in southwest Washington. Crews from Bonneville Power found the roaming animal while they were working on some of the company's transmission towers. Alligators aren't native to southwest Washington. They're assuming that the gator was a pet for somebody who dumped it near the pond. Local animal authorities were called in for help, and this is the first time they dealt with a wild alligator in Longview.
So this is, Longview's by, is that like by Kelso?
Yeah.
Okay. And so this is...
It's on the methamphetamine trail as you're moving southward.
Follow the methamphetamine trail. There really ought to be one of those. There ought to be some sort of a map.
Lewis and Clark pointing.
instead of Sacagawea, though, it would just be some white woman with no teeth and a bad eye, sort of limping along covered in scabs.
Before and after.
Come this way. So they're in there in the pond doing some sort of work, and then there's an alligator?
There's an alligator,
So they weren't called there because of the alligator?
No,
the alligator just happened to be there.
Okay, so let's all...
It's a curious alligator.
Did you say how big it was?
It does not, no.
Please say it was like 40 feet long. Imagine that. You're just some guy, you know, you're making whatever, you know, whatever an hour to go down there and you fix power lines. It is, you know, not glamorous work, but it's a good, steady, solid family man's living. You wake up, your wife packs your lunch, you go to work, you're driving around in your truck, they call you out to a pond to fix some sort of power issue. You go out there, you get out of your truck, you wander into the pond, and then you look over, and there's a goddamn dinosaur 5 feet away with teeth that are 4 inches long and beady eyes and thick armor-like hide just waiting to kill you. I mean, I don't even know how you would go back to work. How do you even recover from that? Imagine if, like, when we came in here someday to do the show, like Sarah went over there to sit in the chair to start the beginning of the program, and there was just an alligator sitting on you. How would you... I mean, I think at that point you would just turn around and you would just go home and you would go back to bed and you would wake up and hope the whole thing had been some kind of a fever dream.
How would the alligator get in here?
I don't even... A weekender.
Probably.
Matt would leave it behind. You know it's true.
I don't know.
There's an alligator covered in chocolate crumbs. All right.
Here's an alligator sitting here eating Charleston chews.
Here's Tim Riley.
A woman uses a sword to fight off an attacker, which is a great idea. A woman used a sword to fight back against a man who broke into her home and tried to attack her. Diana Olson woke up in her home in Southeast to find the man and button his trousers. So she grabbed a sword off a wall. Everyone should have one. I know a lot of people in L.A. who keep swords under their bed because they're very effective. She swung the sword at the man as hard as she could, hitting him in the head and the arm. He ran away from the house. She called 911. She was taken to the hospital. Police took blood samples from the house, but have been unable to find the sword victim.
Where was this at?
Southeast.
Does it say where?
Southeast. Taggart Street.
All right.
Which is off of Division and Burnside.
Fantastic.
In your neighborhood.
Yes. Yes, it is.
A 27-year-old Redmond, Washington man is a quadriplegic after a stereo speaker in his car came loose in a rear-end crash and smashed into his neck.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. The speaker was in the rear of the man's 1973 Datsun 240Z. It was not attached to the car. The man was rear-ended by a pickup while stopped at a ramp metering light.
I know that tone of voice, too. That tone of voice is one of reproachment.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what that is. Well, if it had been properly bolted down as the owner's manual dictates, this wouldn't have happened, son. Now, would it?
Nope.
Yeah.
The speaker flew forward on impact and hit the Datsun driver in the neck. The driver of the truck was injured. It's owned by a Seattle painting company. The State Patrol warns it is important to secure objects in vehicles to prevent such catastrophes.
Who even knew the guys were still driving Datsuns around? When did Datsun quit making cars? Do you know?
Well, when it became Nissan.
Now, is that the deal? Did Datsun
same company
become Nissan,
yeah.
Or was Nissan the company that just bought the Datsun brand and then turned it off?
Or maybe it was Nissan all along and Datsun was the Nissan name in America. Not sure. Some car person must know.
All I know is that Datsun became Nissan, Scotty said. Mm-hmm. Really? All I know is that the Datsun B210 continues to provide punchline fodder to comics like myself the world over. So thank you, Datsun. Thank you for that. I used to have speakers just like that, though. I had, when I had my Ford Escort of all cars, I had the speaker stolen out of my car, I think, 4 different times. Mm-hmm. And after the fourth time, I was just like, F this. And I never bothered to reinstall them. When I got the speakers, I just put the speakers inside little wooden boxes. You know, all the better to sever your spine with, and I just set them in the back window. That was it. And you didn't even have to cut the cables to steal them. I just put the speakers in little wooden boxes, and then I just plugged them in with RCA cables. So literally, if you wanted to steal them, all you'd have to do is break the window, open the door, unplug the speakers, and carry them off. Like, it really was, it was done for the convenience of the criminals at that point. Because I was just tired of having my car torn up.
Now, in the back window of my Torino, in the golden days of my youth, you did not put speakers in before you put down the shag rug along the rear.
Oh, no.
And then you let the speakers rest within the holes you carved in the rug.
Of course.
And then you had room for your CB antenna on your trunk.
My grandfather thought that he was... And I guess he was, really, in Kennewick. He was the most styling man around because on his CB radio, he didn't have the, the handheld thing that you press the button and talk into, you know, break up one line. He actually had, his was like a telephone. He had a telephone handset.
Fancy.
Yeah, seriously. He had, but it was a telephone handset from one of the old, like it was that sort of beige color. like the big plasticky beige telephone handle that everybody had. So that telephone handset sat between the two seats, like sort of where the jockey box is, and it had a little clicker button on the underside. And so you would drive along my grandfather in traffic in his Ford Elite. You would drive along, which is anything but, by the way. Was there ever a more misnamed car than a Ford Elite?
A Chevy Celebrity.
For the win, Tim Riley.
You see Paris Hilton driving one.
But you would drive alongside him, and he would be sitting there with the phone to his, talking probably to no one, just holding up the phone handset to his, and really, who was having interesting CB conversations? There were no interesting Citizens Band conversations happening. They just weren't. So,
stopping at the choke and puke. For a cup of Joe.
That's the only thing good about CB radio was just was just the sort of pop culture lingo, like the movie Convoy, directed by Sam Peckinpah, and starring a woman who looks just like C. Thomas Howell. By the way, I think Kris Kristofferson is also in that movie. So, are CB radio still around?
I would imagine so. Truckers, truck drivers must still use them.
It's probably just gone back to only being the province of truckers. Because I remember at one point. In the late 70s, the FCC was, they were concerned because so much of the band was being taken up because everybody and their brother had a CB radio.
Because it went from 23 to 40 channels.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
I don't say, I was just, I'm...
And Channel 9 was reserved for emergencies.
I remember that. Because of my dad's CB radio, 9 had like, it was colored.
Mm-hmm.
It was like channel 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then 9 had like a red hue around it, indicating that it was only to be used in the case of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
God, and they had a radio, the antenna for your CB was like 100 feet high. Like, you would put it on your truck.
It had some whips that would go over.
I was just going to say, and it had that whip antenna. Mm-hmm. Damn, man. Boy,
it didn't do any good. You were lucky to get 5 miles out with it.
And it's just a fundamentally useless technology. I remember being a kid. Here's what CB radio was like.
It was a chat room of its time.
It really was. It was
the
sort of...
The pre-internet chat room.
It was the sort of... And it was complete with stupid names that you would give yourself. Did you have a CB radio name?
I don't remember if I did. I must have. I don't remember it offhand.
I had one too, but I can't for the life of me remember what it was. This is the weirdest conversation we've ever had. What the hell was my CB radio name? I never thought I would say that on the air. It was something... It was something like, okay, this is embarrassing. This will both date me and make me look like a rube. My CB radio name when I was a child was something like Teddy Bear because of the Red Sovine song. So, my mom would probably know.
But the thing was, if you were a guy in high school, you tried to entice what sounded like these hot babes to meet you at the Dairy Queen. And then you had time to turn around because you wouldn't say, you give a false color of your car. I'm about to arrive in a red 240Z, and all of a sudden you're in some old Studebaker or a Chevy Nova. So you get a good glance at the chick you're supposed to meet at the DQ.
And then, of course, if she's hot, you say, oh, yeah.
She was never hot.
No, I had to borrow my brother's car. This is, this baby is his. My 240Z is still back at work.
You know, and then she tries in vain to contact you for the next 10 minutes. Are you still out there, Mickey One?
Genius.
Radio silence.
Meanwhile, you're switching channels.
Yes.
It really was sort of the IRC of its day. That is true. Oh, damn. I think we've taken a CB radio conversation as far as it'll go. Oh, Scotty's nickname. Scotty's CB name. Is that true? That was your CB radio name? Scotty's CB radio name was Reno. Yeah.
Ooh, he sounds like a high roller with the babes.
Totally. He sounds like a real ladies' man, Scotty. That's wonderful. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, that was interesting. Matt Roloff, best known for the family's TLC program, Big People, Little World. No, Little People, Big World. Was arrested for DUI, as we told you yesterday. He was also arrested for drunk driving back in 2003. He was driving under the influence of intoxicants. It was dismissed after he successfully completed 16 weeks of alcohol treatment. Drivers can only participate in this once every 10 years. That's that.
By the way, Diana from downtown Emos, she started her, now everybody's sending me their CB radio names.
As they should.
She was Portland Rose, but then she apparently found out that there was like 100 other Portland Roses, and so, and she just changed it to Big Bird. which is, no offense, the least sexy CB radio name I've ever heard.
Packy would be just as bad.
Packy. Whatever happened to that little baby, Packy Rose? Remember Packy Rose was born last year?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, how time flies. It's just my one final observation about CB radios is this. Mm-hmm. When you were a kid, the CB radio seemed like it was going to be really fascinating. Like, it seemed like, and you are right when you say it was the Internet, like a forerunner to the Internet, because the Internet sort of, you know, really is legitimately fascinating, but the CB radio was sort of a dry run, and so I just remember being really disappointed as a child with the fact that there was really nothing there, there was really no one to talk to, and the fidelity and the reception was just horrible. And it was a whole lot of, like, me going, like, you know, Breaker 1-9, like, you know, this is whoever my name was. Hello, anybody out there? You know, or whatever. And it would just be a lot of...
Truck stop. Add 1 teaspoon of vanilla to the recipe. Cook on 350 for 20 minutes.
And you know what it was? It was exactly like those walkie-talkies that they sold when I was a kid. Like, you would go to the, you know, whatever whatever the toy store was, the Toys R Us or the KB or whatever toy store I went to, and they would sell walkie-talkies that had the Morse code, dots and dash legend printed on the front so you'd know how to send Morse code. And I don't know if walkie-talkie technology has really improved. It must have by now. Because when you were a kid, you would buy those, like a set of walkie-talkies, and like you would give one to your brother or your friend or whatever, thinking that you were going to be able to... And then you realize they have a workable range of about 9 feet. And beyond, and even then it was muddy, but beyond that, no one could hear what anybody else was saying. It was just the worst, it was the worst technology. It didn't work at all. All right. Let's see. Okay. I'm going to move on from Scotty. Are these? Really? Okay. We've got Sword, Dotson, CB radio. All right. Let's get this Sword call. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
Hey, last night I saw that Sword story on the news,
and
it was actually pretty awesome visually. There's they had like one of those collector swords, like a knight sword.
Now, did they show her actual sword, or was it like an artist replica, like this
type of
sword?
The sword was like in one of those plaques hanging on the wall with the hooks to hold it up. And
totally.
It was kind of like a knight sword. Could have been 4 or 5 feet long, but they didn't really show the scale. But they did show these splashes of, like, bloody gore on the wall.
Excellent.
After she hit him.
Fantastic.
It was really awesome. Just, like, these big splotches of bloody stuff where she hit the guy and then was just running around, I guess, like that, and nobody has found him.
That is so great. The best part is you know, because he's a criminal, he's just got some pea-sized brain. I love the idea that for probably a while after he was being, you know, attacked, he still couldn't process what was happening. Do you know what I mean? Because you're some moron. You don't expect a woman to have a samurai sword. I mean, you expect maybe mace or, you know, something like that. I love the idea that he probably couldn't for the life of him figure out what was going on.
Yeah, he's probably just sitting in his brother's garage somewhere, like putting band-aids on over everything, you know.
Bleeding, going, I don't know. She had some super futuristic device. I don't know what it was.
And she wasn't big or heavy. She's like just a trim little regular sized girl too.
That is so great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks.
There you go. All right. And all right. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for a religious nutcase watch.
Here's your religious nutcase watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
In two parts. This first one comes from Phoenix. Officers responding to a report of an exorcism on a young girl found her grandfather choking her and using stun guns to subdue the man, who later died. A 3-year-old girl and her mother, who was also in the room at the time during the struggle between the 49-year-old man, Ronald Marquis, and officers, was also hospitalized. The relative who called police said an exorcism was in progress. The purpose was to release demons in the spirit of young child, said the sergeant. Officers arrived at the house and entered. They heard screaming coming from a bedroom. The bed had been pushed up against the door. The officers pushed it open a few inches, saw Marquis choking his bloodied granddaughter, who was crying in pain and gasping. The a bloody, naked 19-year-old woman, who police later determined to be Marquis' daughter, and the girl's mother was in the room chanting something of religious in nature. The officers forced open the door, enough for one to enter, leading to a struggle in which an officer used a stun gun on Marquis. After the initial stun had no visible effect, another officer squeezed into the room and stunned him. The girl was freed, passed through the door to a relative.
Markey was placed in handcuffs after a struggle with officers and initially appeared normal.
I don't know how that would be.
To whom?
Maybe they mean Catholic normal.
Oh, and then he stopped breathing.
Oh.
He couldn't be revived and was pronounced dead.
Normal until the death set in.
Yes.
Where was that at?
Phoenix.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, you can always count on the Catholics will never let us down, really. Whenever you think that you're never going to get another one of these stories, whenever you think that the news has become a little too commonplace and ordinary, Catholics always step up. Now, is the second half the guy in the skirt?
It is.
Well, then let's do this. Let's close this and actually start a clergy watch then.
Oh.
Just because it's been too long since we've heard that theme.
That is.
So there's your religious nutcase watch. Choking his bloody granddaughter.
But he appeared normal.
Other than that, he was just an everyday Joe. A lot of tasings these days. All right. And ladies and gentlemen, for Wednesday, here is your clergy watch on the Rick Emerson radio program. Tim Riley with your clergy watch.
This comes to us from Johnson City, Tennessee. So you know anything is possible here. A Baptist minister has been charged with indecent exposure and driving under the influence. 58-year-old Tommy Tester was wearing a skirt when he was arrested after he allegedly relieved himself in front of children at a car wash. Well, this brought to the big action spot in Jackson City, Tennessee.
And lo, I will transform water into pee.
And also accuses Tester of offering police officers oral sex. And says an open bottle of vodka, an empty OxyContin, a prescription bottle were found near his car.
I'm sorry. Turning vodka to pee. Forgive me.
Tester is the minister of the Gospel Baptist Church in Bristol and an employee of the Christian radio station WZAP AM. WZAP issued a statement asking for prayers.
Let's go to their website right now. What are they?
WZAP.
WZAP.
AM. Bristol.
Let's see, I'm going here right now. WZAP. All right, it's opening. No, it's just been squatted on by somebody. Let me try Yahoo. All right, Google. Here we go. Let's see. WZAP Radio.
Bristol.
Welcome to Communicating the Gospel is their tagline. Mm-hmm. Welcome to WZAP 69 AM. Really?
Yes.
That's actually what it is?
Uh-huh.
WZAP 69. I'm sorry.
Perhaps one of the charges is part of our promotion.
Christian radio leader of Mountain Empire. What is his name? What's this? Is the guy with the skirt who was whizzing?
This is Minister Tester. Tommy Tester.
Well, that's strange. He doesn't seem to be on here. It's almost like he doesn't exist, Tim.
Not typical for a radio station.
Let's see here. Tommy Tester. No. 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 No.
Oh, he's been suspended.
Really? That's hard to believe.
And he was released on $1,000 bail, which is probably as much money as you can possibly get out of the Johnson City, Tennessee bank.
I'm looking at let's look at the WZAP programming lineup.
Oh,
what was this guy? He was arrested for whizzing in front of children?
Mm-hmm.
Really? The program that's on right now, I swear to God, Showers of Blessings.
Oh.
Where did we do with that? The internet, really? There's just no.
No.
This,
no way to do it.
I can't possibly make this up. Showers of Blessings. That's wonderful. Excellent. There you go. All right. So he was wearing a skirt, took a whiz in front of some children at a car wash, and then
officers oral sex.
I'm sure he's a real looker, too. Mm. It's hard to believe they didn't take him up on that. Fantastic. There you go. There's your clergy watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Because I got to have faith. Fantastic. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So TV news helicopters have been in the news lately, not for good things. Now the KGW helicopter is in trouble. They were covering a retardant drop on a wildfire near the Dells. They violated fire flight regulations, causing two retardant runs to be waved off, delaying the third.
the final attempt to drop the chemical. State aviation specialist and safety officer for the agency said the pilot for KGW has been briefed on the rules. Well, he had been. And apparently he didn't follow them, so he got in the way of them fighting a forest fire.
I'm sorry, I was just laughing at the word retardant.
As you should.
Network news is itself kind of a retardant. So they were just blocking, like, firefighting helicopters?
Yeah.
Well done, KGW.
And the KGW news director said he can guarantee that the pilot is a responsible person. Is there a certificate for that? Certificate of responsible person.
He filled out an internet survey. He printed out a form, and they hang it in his cubicle. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I didn't watch their news today, but you can bet they were out covering this garbage truck fire. Firefighters made quick work of extinguishing a garbage truck fire near the Pittick Mansion this morning. This was a big story. It was Fox 12's helicopter that spotted the garbage truck on fire, so they were first on the scene. Thousands of dollars to cover this garbage truck.
All right, KGW.
Shortly before 7 o'clock, the cause of the fire remains unknown. A bronze statue stolen from the Oregon State University frat house. One of them has been found in a Corvallis basement. They responded to a report of a statue, a 3-foot-tall statue of the Roman god Vulcan. The statue went missing from the Delta Chi fraternity house on June 10th. It's valued at $100,000. An insurance company recently offered a $5,000 reward for its return. It's in good condition. They arrested 20-year-old Marcus Anus for aggravated theft and burglary.
I was wondering why we were reading this story. Now it's all so clear.
Marcus Anus, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It seems like a joke is unnecessary. It's just it would be superfluous.
Well, I said set it up for your pleasantries.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Let's see here. Rick. Oh, here we go. I was making fun of Evergreen College. Rick, I went to the Evergreen State College, you ass. The school makes well-rounded individuals through cross-disciplinary education. The school is consistently one of the U.S. News and World Report's top 3 liberal arts colleges, and Matt Groening went there. P.S., I was stoned the whole time, never took math, never took a test, and Ken Kesey was my graduation speaker. F you. All right. Well, well spoken, sir. All right. And apparently many porn stars have gone there as well. This one says, Rick, can you get Tim on this story? Why is there a blimp flying around or above downtown Portland?
Do we know that that's true?
We don't know.
Okay.
It's always possible, I'm sure.
There you go. Spoken as only the CBS Radio News Department can speak with utter clarification and certainty, sir.
We can't spare... maybe we could send Scotty out to see if there's a blimp out
there. Maybe we could get the KGW News helicopter to fly dangerously close to it.
I'm sure that wouldn't take very much prodding.
All right.
Speaking of punishing children... This comes from Utah, of all places, which should surprise no one. A man and a woman are accused of murdering a boy at the Melting Pot restaurant. The female suspect is the sister of the young boy who was killed. The defense attorney says it's a tragic outcome. The boy was placed in a large bucket of ice water as a disciplinary measure. He died of hypothermia.
Certainly is her brother, and it's been a horrible family tragedy, but the rest of the details have to come out.
So the parents didn't do this? So it was the sister who did this?
Yes.
At a restaurant?
Yes.
I'm confused. Exactly.
Did you, was this local?
No, it's in
Salt Lake City.
Oh, because there's a melting pot here, too.
Really?
It didn't happen at this one.
So this isn't... it was at the... So did the restaurant themselves, like, help with this?
It doesn't really say. We'll have to investigate.
Seems like there's a finite number of places in a restaurant you could submerge a boy in ice water without somebody, you know, noticing that.
Unless this is a typical disciplinary measure of.
Well, Utah's not really like other places. Utah kind of is its own. My wife's actually heading there as we speak right now. She's on her way to Utah. So she's going to be there. Going to be there for 7 fun-filled days. So
what are you going to do with all that time to yourself?
I don't know. Be glad that I'm not in Utah. Really, it doesn't matter. I could spend my 7 days here just being covered in ants and spiders, but it doesn't matter.
You can do that at home.
All you'd have to do is reflect upon the fact that, that I'm not in Utah. I'll put a smile to my face.
A Rock Castle, Colorado man died outside a movie complex yesterday when he hooked a cable from his neck to a concrete pillar and then sped away in his car. Nobody reported the 57-year-old man's suicide outside the Castle Rock Stadium 12 movie theater until a construction worker spotted the car at an adjacent field and made the horrific find.
Wait, hold on. So this is sort of like when you pull out a tooth by tying a string to it and then tying the other end to a door?
But this time it was his neck.
And not a door, but a lamppost.
Yeah.
And he was in a car.
Mm-hmm.
So he got into a car.
Mm-hmm. Hooked the cable from his neck to Castle Rock, Colorado.
So he got into a car, tied a rope around his neck, the other end to a lamppost, got in the car, and then sped away?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's almost kind of cool. I mean, you've got to admire that. I mean, that, you know, that's a little creativity.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard of anybody killing themselves that way.
There's always a first time.
No, that's true. I wonder if that just takes your head clean off. Or if it's just sort of a... It must. I mean, that must be... That just must be a full-on decapitation that happens there.
So you must have to be going down a hill, I would imagine.
Well, no. I mean, if you just... If there was sufficient... We should get some sort of engineer to weigh in on this. If there was sufficient slack, like let's say your car is right next to the lamppost.
Yes.
One, the rope is tied around the lamppost. You got to tie that knot really well, too.
So it takes a little practice.
And then
you must have been a Boy Scout.
Tying a sheep shank knot. And then the other end is around your neck. Now, let's say you've got a good 30 feet full of slack.
Mm-hmm.
You floor it. Because there's got to be enough slack rope that the car can reach some sort of terminal velocity before it snaps taut. Otherwise, it's just you're just going to end up hobbling around and taking your meals through a straw. So, well, I don't know. Maybe there's
maybe
some
somebody
sort of...
like Bill Wattenberg to
MythBusters needs to get right on this. Oh, apparently we've got an answer to the blimp thing. Hello, David. Hi.
Yeah, it's not an answer, but there's a blimp flying over downtown Vancouver right now. I think we ought to call Clyde and find out what's going on.
Over downtown Vancouver?
Yes.
What really counts as downtown Vancouver?
Oh, I've been there.
The park that was here back in the 1860s or whatever it is.
All right. Finding downtown Vancouver is sort of like, okay, well, I'll just take your word for it. What is the blimp for? What kind of blimp is it, sir?
It's there's no markings on it.
Uh-oh.
Not even the Hindenburg?
Is it a black blimp, sir?
No, it's white.
All right. So it's an unmarked blimp floating around over Vancouver.
Does it have Arabic markings on it by any chance?
Oh, God.
Yeah, does it say there is no prophet but Allah?
God is great.
Yeah, no, I'm misquoting it. What is that Malcolm X quote I'm trying to do? I mangled my Malcolm X just now. Well, it is. If it's unmarked and it's white and it's over Vancouver, it's probably just a store brand blimp. You know what I mean? It's just a generic brand. They couldn't afford the Goodyear blimp.
Yeah, but why would this Portland store send a blimp over Vancouver? That
doesn't
make sense.
Now, wait a minute. Now, but how do you know it's from Portland?
Well, someone said they saw it flying over Portland.
It doesn't mean it comes from here.
Oh, wait. Here we go. This email says, it's the Goodyear blimp. It flew up the 205 and then away. But you're saying it's completely unmarked.
It doesn't say Goodyear on it.
Hmm.
Very strange.
Yeah. It's a Les Schwab blimp.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now. All right. Let's take a break.
It remains a mystery.
Come back. It can't be known. Ooh, here we go. Horrible farm accident. Hey, what's the worst thing to be scalped by? You'll find out after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Still to come. Oh, we have this OJ news to get to. Later on, Ed McCarthy from CNN. Top 5 slow dance songs of the 70s and more. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Rick Emerson Show. Apparently, it is the Goodyear blimp. I guess it was in McMinnville for the last 4 days. I guess it says Goodyear on it, but maybe it's only on one side. Maybe they're cutting back on expenses. They can only put Goodyear on one side. I wonder if it did. We were just talking about this during the break. That does seem like a very 70s kind of thing. I don't even remember the last time I saw the Goodyear blimp. All right. It was just a thing that existed to be referenced. Ice Cube songs. It's 503-733-2970. All right, let's see. We have, what do we got here? I have this. Rick, can you repeat the info about the book you talked about on the 11 a.m.? I want to check it out. Oh, this is Tim and Southeast. The book is called The Bronx is Burning by Jonathan Mahler, who writes for the New York Times. Jonathan Mahler, The Bronx is Burning. It's also an 8-part miniseries on ESPN right now. All right, here we've, let's see. So somebody said, Rick, can you please pass this story to Tim so he can read it, if only for the first couple sentences? All right, I am passing you this. This is from Florida. This is from... TampaBay's10.com. Tim, there you go.
Facing prison, an armless driver says he's at the end of the road. Dateline, Lando Lakes, Florida. Pasco County's most notorious driver is facing prison time. Michael Francis Wiley lost both arms and a leg in an electrical accident and taught himself to drive using his stumps, toes, and teeth.
There you go. That's really it. There's really nowhere to go from there.
No.
Stumps, toes, and teeth. The whatever that guy's name is story. Also this, here's somebody to be glad you're not. Girl scalped by... farm sprinkler. You know, that's not really a thing that you would consider possible, you know, the capable of scalping you. Sarah was asking if it was... Now, what is the thing the Reaper carries? Is it a scythe or a sickle? And are they the same thing?
I thought it was... Actually, no, I don't know.
See, I don't really know. Because there's, you know, when you see the Grim Reaper, and he's got the big wooden stick with the sharp metal curvy thing on it. Now, is that a scythe? And if that's a scythe, what is a sickle? Or are they two names for the same farm implement? Or are they, in fact, two separate but related items? I don't really know the answer to that. I will, however, read you this story. A Umatilla County teenager who survived a horrible farm accident was scheduled for surgery on her scalp Tuesday. Bobby Joe Fleetwood was sitting on a farm sprinkler. I love how they write these where they lead up to the ominous sentence. Bobby Joe Fleetwood was sitting on a farm sprinkler. Sounds like the beginning to a country song. Except not about scalping, it would be about marrying somebody. Bobby Joe Fleetwood was sitting on a farm sprinkler when the wheels began to turn. Her hair became caught in the axle and it tore off her scalp. The end. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
A Central Florida man has been hospitalized after a pit bull bit him in the face during an attack inside a pet store.
Oh. I didn't think they sold pit bulls in pet stores.
Well, apparently this is a pit bull that was being walked inside the pet store by a customer.
That seems like a good idea. Let's get our pit bull and take it into a store filled with other animals.
Richard Barber went into the pet supermarket store and tried to pet a pit bull inside the business. The dog bit him on his face and arm. I asked the dog owner if it was a friendly dog, and he said, yes.
Yeah.
And I pet the dog, and it wagged its tail. It appeared to be friendly. Then all it was changed its attitude, changed its mood, and bit me in the face and the arm.
You know, Tim, pit bulls are misunderstood creatures. They're, it's just media depiction. Media hype is what that is, Tim.
Pet supermarket requires all animals in the store to be on the leash with a human presence, so he didn't break any rules.
Jesus.
Right. The pit bull was taken to Orange County Medical Services. Oh, this is from Florida, did I tell you that?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's from where, Tim?
Florida.
Yeah! Don't even try. Don't even reach
let you
for
have
it.
That
uh-huh.
one. I feel bad for you. I've beat you so many times.
That's a little good. It's a quota system. It's affirmative action. I'm finally getting one. All right.
Also from Orange County, Florida, a 75-year-old man reported missing was rescued from an Orange County house early today.
Where? Yeah! It's all me. All right.
Do we have somebody on the phone?
I'm sorry?
Yes, you do.
Oh, hi.
Who's this?
How did that happen?
It's Diana from downtown. I don't know. There was a little beep and a rush, and here I am.
I didn't even touch the phone.
That's bizarre.
That's completely weird.
Well, you know, Clyde will explain it all to you.
All right. Hey, how can I help you?
Well, okay, death carries a scythe. It's a long-handled weapon, and it's a precursor to the lawnmower.
Okay. I don't know why that's the funniest part for some reason. Okay, so death carries a scythe. What is a sickle?
A sickle, as you'll see on the Russian, the Soviet Union flag, is
right.
The hand. That's like the precursor to the weed whacker.
So a scythe is... So they are related to one another, but different
they're
in
both, this. Yeah, they're both farm implements.
And a scythe is at the end of a long pole.
Right, so you can mow down great fields of hay with a scythe.
But you can mow... Or humans, depending on who you are.
Depending on who you're going after.
All right, actually. Thank creepy. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know. It's a myth of death. He's here about the reaping. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, I got a bump update, and I just want to say glad you're back on Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
But I think the blimp's over Ridgefield now.
Okay.
Oh, the blimp.
Oh, the blimp is over Ridgefield? Where?
It's like over the amphitheater.
Oh, okay. All right. So is it in fact a Goodyear blimp, sir?
Yeah, I saw it like 15 minutes ago.
Excellent. All right.
Goodyear right across the side.
All right. What is your name?
Brandon.
Brandon, thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Better to let him go into the night thinking it was a worthwhile call. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So getting back to the 75-year-old man, recently reported missing. He claims he was held prisoner for 14 days without food after he followed a prostitute home for sex. Lord Michael Bryant of Jacksonville told him he purchased a prostitute for his enjoyment.
That's great.
And brought her to the home the woman suggested. The pair had sex, and then told police he was jumped by four young black males. They stole his money and debit cards and kept him inside the house for 14 days. Four people have been taken into custody. He's in good condition, but he probably won't meet the same woman again. Bally Total Fitness is bankrupt. It has, more than 40 affiliates that filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection.
It has $396 million in assets and $761 million in debt. So who knows what's going to happen after that?
There's one downtown.
Right? I was just going to say, well, I think, well, I mean, because it's right by 24-Hour Fitness, isn't it? They're kind of in the same block.
No, they're further down.
All right. Well, yeah. does that mean it's going to stay open? It doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
No.
You know, I'm asking if it's going to stay open like I belong or whatever go. So, yeah, I don't care.
You're not going to go to a gym?
Nope.
I don't think so.
No, I'm not.
Well, it may seem like a quiet country where nothing else happens except for ice hockey, curling, and beer drinking. But our neighbors to the north are proving to be quite a draw for thousands of disgruntled Americans. The number of U.S. citizens who moved to Canada has hit a 30-year high. We haven't seen these type of numbers since the Vietnam draft dodgers. The reasons, for the most part, are the currently political situation. A lot of Americans moving there because they just don't like the war or the president. I can't get over the look of this...
This woman. This so-called woman.
There's another picture of her.
Oh, God, that's unpleasant.
Now, who would have children with this woman?
That's, you know, don't you...
Or intimate relations.
Don't you think...
How desperate can you possibly be?
I mean, this is
and
what...
The maroon escort, or is that a burgundy escort of hers that's parked in front of a rocking horse... And bags full of garbage in her trailer.
A maroon escort, by the way, sounds like some sort of sexual term.
It does.
I long to take a ride in your burgundy escort.
So here she is wearing a white beater standing in front of her garbage.
And so this is... And she's a meth woman, of course.
She looks like a loving mom, doesn't she?
You know...
We have two pictures.
What is the story?
A boy for taken from squalor after mother is arrested for meth. Her name, or his name, or its name, is Teresa Ann Bryce.
Known as Terry, I would imagine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, squalor, of course, I mean, I probably does not even begin to describe the look inside it, but you would think that at least meth would make her slender. Do you know what I mean? Wouldn't meth trim you down a little bit?
See, there's a... Well, look at all these dirty dishes, and a cat sitting on the table, and meat in the sink.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Look at those pork chops.
That's fantastic.
Pork chops and a cat.
That's where you do the de-thawing, Tim.
And there's a sign that says frog crossing, so one could wonder what else goes on in this house.
But it really does beg the question of who it exactly is that copulated with that woman. I mean, is there a dad? Well, of course.
Maybe she's like Miss Milwaukee or something, for all I know.
Or maybe it was just dark. Maybe there was a power outage of some kind. Maybe there's school for the blind nearby. Oh God!
Experts say your focus is not cleaning the house or buying groceries. Well, she did buy some meat.
Apparently, on the face of the woman you're having sex with. Did you ever see those news stories? And there are an appalling number of those where you just look at one of the. And I don't mean to single out the women. You look at either party. You're like, who?
She looks like Robin Williams on a bad day.
She looks. I mean.
It is before he dressed up as Mrs. Doubtfire.
It seems like there's some other guy whose name is just off the tip of my tongue. He's that pro wrestler, Mankind. If you know, wrestling fans in the house, if you know who Mankind is, picture Mankind with real long hair and a vagina. That's exactly what this woman looks like. I mean, there's any number of these news stories, and they're all like blah, 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 and his companion have 9 children together. And usually one of them is sort of passable, but the other one is just what in Kennewick we used to call butt ugly. And you just wonder how it is.
Bunch of banjo strummers.
Really? I mean, you wonder how it is that you could, how desperate could you possibly
Ooh,
be?
Ooh, baby.
You,
let's make a night of this.
Do you ever...
Do you have any pork rinds?
I long to eat crumbled up Pringles off your sultry body.
I bought a carton of Lucky Strikes for after.
Can I...
Crank up that Ernest Tubb record.
Get out that coffee can of bacon grease. Let me ask you this, because I was thinking about this yesterday, actually, or 2 days ago. I was at a crosswalk, and I was waiting for some people to cross in front of me. Mm-hmm. And a homeless couple crossed in front of me. And, you know, you can tell they're homeless, obviously. And, of course, I got a dog. And so I was all fixated on the dog for a while. And about, you know, how it just, I mean, I know that we talk a lot about dogs on the show, but we don't have children. So what are you going to do? Whenever I see a homeless couple with dogs, it always angers me. I always just want to go take the dog and, like, stick him in some random home where you know he'd be better off. Because the dog is always has one of those packs on him. And the dog is, like, laden down with a bunch of their homeless crap that he's got to carry along. But anyway, so it's this homeless couple, and they're both in their 20s. Did you ever wonder about how the homeless hook up? Do you know what I mean? I mean, how does that happen? And is there a lot of competition for women, like, inside the homeless world? And I mean, where to? And I mean, if there's a homeless couple, presumably they have intimate relations at some point. And so where does that happen? I mean, does that happen, like, I'm not trying to be silly about this. I really do wonder. Like,
probably
does it happen
in your driveway?
Under a bridge?
Well, like, speed dating under a bridge?
So I was just going to say under a bridge, but the speed dating thing hadn't really occurred to me. And I mean, is that, like, they must just stop by the Planned Parenthood or whatever and just get the big bowl of free condoms or whatever, I would hope. But I mean, I do wonder, like, is that, like, if you go to the homeless shelter, are there single beds and couple beds? I mean, are there sort of, like, you know, like a king-size bed when, you know, when he's there with his, you know, with m'lady or whatever? Is that, I just, the whole concept of romance inside the world of the homeless is sort of strangely fascinating to me. Because it's not just the younger set. Oh, no, romance knows no age. You'll see, you know, the homeless couples where it's like a guy and a woman and they're like in their 40s or something, or what appears to be their 40s. Exponential aging does sort of seem to be the rule in the transit community. But you'll see a couple that's like 45 and it's like a man and a woman. And, I mean, when you are, like in the real day-to-day non-homeless world, obviously there are certain traits that, broadly speaking, as a man, make it easier to find a partner. If you are exceptionally physically attractive, or if you are financially successful, or you have some sort of prestige or celebrity or a powerful position in your industry or community. But really, in the world of the homeless, I mean, what is it that attracts women to one homeless guy over another? It can't be looks, because, you know, once you get the grime and the dreadlocks, they all kind of look the same, you know what I mean? Underneath just a bunch of matted hair and grease stains, I mean, how could you even tell what a guy looks like? I really do wonder, there's probably some book out there, probably some study being done on this right now. I do wonder, in the world of the homeless, what makes one man more desirable than another? I mean, these are the, and I'm floating these questions now knowing that there is no answer to these, but it is the kind of stuff that I think about. So, I don't know, if you're some researcher looking for a book topic, you can do that right now. All right, here's Tim Riley.
A 37-year-old Pensacola man of Florida died after opening his car door to spit.
I was going to do the Florida sounder, but no, I'm so
enraptured
by the...
Miguel Regulio was a passenger in a car when he decided he needed to spit. So the 37-year-old opened the door, leaned out, fell, and smacked his head on the pavement.
Is he dead?
Yes.
Excellent. I can't wait to spit. Really, there's... If you just can't, I could spit later, but I have
just
to
don't spit well. Some people have the good spitting gene.
Can you
spit for several?
Are
yards.
You saying for you now you can't spit? Well?
I can't spit well.
Me, you know,
I kind of drool. So it's useless for me to even try to spit.
You just unhinge your lower jaw like a trapdoor and let it ooze out.
Some people can do that well. It takes some sort of training, but I have never been able to master the spit.
You learn in the same class as cow chip tossing.
Oh, that could be.
Rodeo
riding.
There's a lot of those kids who mastered spitting early on in grade school. Or like, Sarah, you mastered the gleeking thing where you could, like, you like spit without spitting.
I'm very good at it.
I can't do it at all. Can't do it. Never could do it. I also, here's another male trait that I cannot, that I do not possess. I cannot burp on command. Can you burp on command? I bet you can.
I can.
Can you do it?
No, I don't want to do it.
Come on.
That would be unladylike.
Come on.
It'll look hot.
No, it really won't.
But guys, when I hear you burp, just a little one.
I'm not going to burp.
Tiny little burp.
What show are we, Rick? Come
pretend you're insulting.
Really, no, that's what I'm saying. What really? What show are we?
Pretend you're at Division and 42nd.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to burp on the air.
All
I'll get
right.
off mic.
No, there's no point.
That's zany morning
what
show.
What listeners is that going to gain us?
So gross.
No, but I'm seeing. No. It's gross if I do it. If you do it, it's an interesting character quirk.
No,
but I can't.
I don't know.
And you would always sit next to that guy in third grade who could, like, burp the alphabet. I could. My friend Scott could do that. I could never engage in any of these. And you're right. I can't spit either. Also, and maybe this is just because I'm kind of a dandy in this way, I hate spitting outdoors. I hate it. I always, if I have to spit outdoors, like if I just like you swallow a bug or something, you're bicycling, you have to spit, I always just feel like such a social cretin. It always feels very crude to me to spit outdoors. So, and then, let me also say this. outdoors, if I do have to spit, again, some of you get something, you get some in your mouth, you got to get rid of it or whatever, I always am afraid that I will be that guy who will, as they always say in the cliche, will get ticketed for spitting on a sidewalk. Because it is technically illegal to expectorate when you are outdoors. I always am afraid that I'm going to be that. I'm going to spit on the sidewalk, and then there's going to be some hard-up cop who's low on his quota. And he's going to come and he's going to like hit me for $79 or something. So, anyway, spitting, blah, blah, blah. Hey, do we have that OJ story?
I do.
We should probably do that only because Ed McCarthy is going to be on in a little while talking about O.J., and I want an excuse to play this O.J. sound that I have.
All right. Let's move ahead here to the O.J. story. O.J. Simpson's claims his book, If I Did It, was penned by a ghostwriter and its writer and is full of errors. The former football star talked about his book recently in an internet interview streamed live by the Dallas-based website Market News First. He admitted he cooperated in writing the book and did it only for the money.
I didn't purport to be anything other than, hey, this is blood money. I realize it. I'm doing it only for the money.
I just don't even know how to comment on OJ anymore, except to say that, first of all, we knew it was a ghostwriter. It was a guy, I don't even remember his name now, but at one point we even had his name, we reported, because he was a guy who used to write for the Inquirer. Hmm. He was a former Inquirer editor who ghost wrote this book for OJ. And clearly, I mean, look, O.J. is not a Rhodes Scholar. I think we're all aware of this. And if you read the book, and it's out there, it's floating around on the interwebs. If you read O.J.'s book, it is clearly written by someone who is not O.J. I mean, you can just tell. So did anybody watch this O.J. interview?
No. I didn't even know it was on.
No, no one knew it was on. No.
Where was it promoted?
Nowhere. And it's when, and get this. So O.J. did this interview. It was an hour long. And the thing is, it's so tempting to watch tonight because tonight's going to be exponentially more viewed. Get this. Last night they did a solid hour-long internet-only call-in Q&A interview with O.J., part one of three. They're doing two more. I think they're doing one tonight and one tomorrow. Each night it is a full hour of O.J. looking really stupid and uncomfortable in an upholstered armchair, and then this sort of woman, she kind of looks like a blonde Candy Crowley, sitting across from him on like a bad cable access type set. And then they're just taking calls from the audience, and it's just they're relentlessly pranking him. And every call is a prank call. I didn't watch the entire hour because the website was just streaming so slowly. I couldn't be bothered to watch it. And again, it's not a real TV show. It's not a real show of any kind. It's on the internet, and it's just some fake, like, it's some network that is clearly just funded on like $4, and they're trying to get a little bit of attention by pimping it out to the regular media.
Then why can't Scotty get him on this program?
I don't know. We probably could. We could probably get OJ
on
this.
I think our budget's a little over $4.
We should try to get
that much.
We should get Fred Goldman on, and then also get OJ on. Scotty, there you go. So there goes new goal for you. You know, once that Peter Criss thing flames out. So OJ did this hour long interview with Does it say the name of the interviewing, the woman? Because I forget her name.
It does not.
This woman has the worst job on earth because she's sitting there in a room with O.J., who you know is just like a horrible person. You know, he's just an awful person. And so she's sitting there being paid to just be completely straightforward. She's trying to do they're trying to play it off like it's a real journalistically solid, you know, like integrity-filled interview. And she's trying to be completely impassive and blank, and she takes one prank call after another for O.J. Because really, who was watching this last night? The only people who even knew, I didn't know it was happening. And I'm a big fan of the O.J. story.
So there's probably no delay because it's at the internet. You don't need
delay. Of course,
delay.
No delay at all. Okay. The only people who knew this interview were happening were people who were just busy trolling like TMZ chat rooms for no reason. So TMZ has edited down this interview to like 90 seconds of greatest hits. And I went through it this morning. I'm pretty sure it's clean. But I mean, we'll play it again. It's 90 seconds of this O.J. interview. And keep in mind, by the way, this is not fake. It's not fabricated. It's not a kooky DJ thing that we've made up with an impressionist. This is idiot O.J. Simpson being interviewed by this woman and then just taking calls on this interview he did. And TMZ put this together. And so, I'm just trying to think if it needs any setup. Except to say that every time he gets an awkward question, listen to how O.J. just feigns that he doesn't hear the phone call. That's his one response to everything.
Are you kidding?
No, it's a whole lot of, no, I'm sorry, Matt, I didn't hear your phone call. That's next. That's it. That's his response to everything. So this is O.J. taking all of these calls, and it's like they're edited together real quickly, one after the other. So this is OJ being interviewed last night.
Guys, let's go to Kevin, I believe, in New Jersey. Kevin, what's your question for OJ? Kevin, what's your question for OJ?
Hi, good show, dude. My kid Chris was wondering, do you think it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in one season or slice two necks in one night?
I'm having a little trouble, Kevin, hearing you.
All right, Alex is listening to us in Ohio. Hey, Alex.
Yes.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Not good. Juice?
Juice, can you hear me, Juice?
Yes, I can hear you, buddy.
Yeah, remember when you played for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you kill Bill Walsh?
This is Steve from Allentown. How you doing?
Not too bad, Steve.
It was reported back during the famous chase, you know, that went on in 94.
Yes.
It was reported on CBS3 here in near in Philadelphia that by Larry Menti that you were squeezing your helmet.
That I was what?
Hey, how are you doing?
Not bad, Brett.
Hey, OJ, I had a question for you. You know, with everything that Michael Vick has been going through and being indicted, I was just wondering if you wanted to meet me on the Jersey Shore to do live.
There we go.
I don't know what he said.
You're gonna get jokers, but that's the great thing. It's
well,
it's wide
that's,
open.
No, I don't mind. I mean, it, yeah. You know, people can say what if it's negative or what, as long as they're serious about the question mm-hmm. they're asking, it's easier to tell a joke, but it don't bother me.
The best part is when the guy just asks straight out, "Did you kill Bill Walsh?" Which is just wonderful. And that opening line when the guy says, "Was it harder to break the record or to kill two people?" And OJ just straight-facedly. I mean, the weird thing is when you watch it.
Well, because he's been putting up this facade for years and years now.
He's not flustered at all. I mean, that's the amazing, weird, hilarious, creepy thing about it. In no way is OJ flustered. When the guy just says, "So, what was it that led to cut through two, you know, spinal cords with a knife?" And OJ, "I can't hear you. Next caller." Just totally plays it off. It's just fantastic and awful. Wait, we've got OJ calls here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could replay that introductory sounder, because it sounded like OJ said, maybe I misunderstood that, but it sounded just like he said, yes, it was blood money, I needed the money. Or, yes, it was blood money, and I did it for the money.
Well, this is that, okay, this is the sounder of OJ being interviewed about writing the book. Tim, do you have that? Okay, here we go. This is that.
I didn't purport to be anything other than, hey, this is blood money, I realize it, I'm doing it only for the money.
Yeah, no, that's what he says. Yeah, he says, this is blood money.
This is blood money, and then he said something like, I needed the money or something
yeah,
like
I'm,
that.
Yeah, I'm doing it only for the money, something like
so
that,
this
yeah.
This is just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. He can't fall any lower, but it's like now he's just rolling over and over and over in the same thing.
The story is just so strange and absurd, there really is just no way to make fun of it. It's become a thing that you cannot even parody. Do you know what I mean?
It's like that. You just don't want to. Yeah, I don't know. I think a long time ago, everybody just kind of wanted it to go away.
Yeah, no, but that's the great, terrible thing about OJ. He just won't leave.
He won't.
OJ is the house guest who will not go.
So now he's just saying, yes, it's blood money, but I'll take blood money because I need the money.
Yeah, no, it's true. All right.
God. Anyway,
thank you. Bye now. All right, we got a break. We'll come back around the corner with Ed McCarthy, who's talking a little bit about OJ. We got some more calls about that as well. Coming up later on, top five slow dance songs from the 70s. We'll talk to Mr. Skin as well, our own Scotty J. More of your phone calls, and Tim Riley returns as well. It's 503-733-2970. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Still to come. We'll talk to Mr. Skin from MrSkin.com. More from Tim Roddy. We have Ed McCarthy joining us in just a moment. Our hunt for the second worst story ever. We will count down the top five slow dance songs of the 70s. It's all on the way. Give me just 1 second here while I finish this cup of coffee, and then we'll talk to Ed McCarthy.
Fantastic. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. Our own friend and mellow dude, Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir. How are you?
Rick, how are you this afternoon?
How's life, my friend? How are things?
Oh, started out good. Got hit by a semi-tractor trailer on the way into work today. But other than that, we're doing great.
When you say got hit by a semi, you mean you did?
Yeah.
It's a dumb question.
He wasn't allowing me to merge, in other words. I was getting in at a construction area where we have, just to make it pure and simple, there was a lot of room, and I said, okay, here's a chance. Had my signal on. He thought that it would be fun to speed up and bang me.
Jesus. And so what kind of, if you could say, what kind of car were you driving at the time?
It's a smaller vehicle. I only had scratches on the car. It's not a big deal. It's just that, I got out and this guy was just out of control. I mean, he was just a lunatic. So fortunately, there was an officer that was coming down the left lane and I'd seen him coming. So I said, just hang on a second. Flag the cop over and I said, this guy has violent tendencies. Don't want to deal with him.
And so did you get the feeling it was about to come to fisticuffs?
Well, yeah, I had the feeling he was going to start swinging at me, and, I just didn't need that action today.
No, sir, and most truck drivers, are very considerate and courteous, but I got to tell you this, occasionally you'll run across some rogue out there, just some stray nitwit, who clearly should not be in charge of, driving anything. He shouldn't be allowed to go on Autopia at Disneyland, and yet they put him in charge of a Freightliner or something, and I got to a guy who is driving a truck really badly on the road next to you is one of life's real terrors. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It really is distinctly unnerving.
Yeah,
right.
Not good. Well, because obviously, you get bumped by one of those. They're a little bit bigger than you
Seriously.
Are,
Well, I'm glad things worked out well for you. I mean, seriously, because if there's no cop there, and you're, not that you're picking a fight, but you get into some sort of a nose-to-nose confrontation with a truck driver, I mean, that's just going to end badly for everybody. So
yeah. You didn't know the cop was back there. That was the whole deal. So
hey, let's talk about everybody's pal, O.J. Simpson.
O.J., yeah, he had a little interview going there, didn't he, online, online interview?
Did you watch that, or did you at least watch the sort of greatest hits from it that that TMZ put up today?
Yeah, the interviewer was Kate Delaney, and... anyway, he kind of went off a little bit.
Who is she? I mean, is she a real journalist, or is she somebody who just only... I mean, I've never even heard of this organization before they got this interview with him.
Yeah, they came up with this thing. It's a Dallas-based Market News First is the name of the outfit.
Right.
And Kate got him on there to her credit because he's a tough guy to get for interviews. He doesn't do any of those.
Well, that was going to be my question, actually. Is it that nobody wants to interview him, or is it just that he is reluctant to do it?
Yeah, he doesn't do any interviews. He's pretty much underground.
It's hard to imagine since, we were playing this recap of the interview, and, the second question is somebody asked him if he killed Bill Walsh, which really is just the look on his face, too, is a little unnerving because it's like one prank call after another. And yet the guy's, completely unrattled. He's just totally unflappable about the whole thing because he's either, this is my speculation now as an observer, because he's either stoned, completely apathetic, or has just over time convinced himself that he had no part in this or some combination of the above three. He's just completely stoic through the entire interview. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, they had one caller asking him if he thought it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in a season or slice two necks in one night.
Yeah, no, that's the good call where O.J.'s response is, I'm sorry, Kevin, I can't hear your phone call. We'll have to move on. So it really is, it is kind of an only in America sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like
absolutely.
The brand of celebrity that O.J. has, and to some degree still has in this country, is just, it really is a thing that only would exist in America, where, and for better or for worse, that guy can just kind of scuttle around like a human cockroach and just continue to pop up every now and again and irritate us. So, is there any word from the Goldman family on when they're gonna start sticking this book into the stores? Because I would imagine... It seems to me that's what prompted O.J. to come out and do this interview, right? He was probably so irritated by the Fred Goldman court victory.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's really upset over that because he's the guy that's going to get the money, and O.J.'s not going to get any of that money. So that's what that's all about.
So is there any timeline on when this book's going to get put to the stores?
Soon, I would imagine. That was the last hurdle they had to go through. And I want to see how they're going to package this thing. We know that he's going to change the title on this, but that's something that we'll have to wait. wait and see.
It just seems like the two of them ought to skip to the bottom of the page and just get some house together on VH1. You know what I mean? Just get some Fred Goldman, O.J. Simpson reality show going and just be done with it, because that sort of seems to be the inevitable end of the road for this whole deal. So, all right. I'm glad you survived your encounter with the trucker this morning. I hope the rest of your day goes a little bit more smoothly, my friend.
I hope so, too. Thanks
all
a
right,
lot.
There you go. Ed McCarthy. Enjoy the rest of your day. Fantastic. Ed McCarthy at the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
503-733-2970.
Before we do anything else,
Scotty J. I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, I kiss you on the mouth. Please let me.
Good morning, Metolius.
So welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show, our intrepid... I'm sorry, what are you again? What's your title, Scotty?
Good afternoon, Wheeler.
Uh-huh.
Did you run out of funny names?
Pad.
What is it? Wait, which stands for what? I don't have it in front of me anymore. What
Programming Assistant Director.
Okay. And that means what?
I don't know.
Okay. How's the Peter Criss interview coming?
Well, we just talked about that yesterday, so she needed a day or two to get it scheduled.
She needed a day or two to come up
so
with
it. So nothing's
just
happening.
Needed a day or two to begin ignoring you, after which you can tell me that yet another interview has gone up and
no,
nobody matches.
I'm dangling the carrot of other stations now. And I think I need to get an interview booked before I give that information.
What other
out.
Stations could you possibly give her other than KUFO? Maybe.
Well, to
really, who else are you? Where else?
Right,
are you,
but to her,
would
she
you like to go
onto
our rhythmic AC station, Peter Criss? I mean, so does she? Have you positioned yourself with this woman that represents Peter Criss as a player? Does she think that you hold sway over the entire CBS Radio West Coast?
Well, that's kind of how I made it sound.
Uh-huh.
All right. Boy.
Here locally in Portland.
Yes. Yeah, Make sure to let us know how successful
I'm playing hardball. If she doesn't give me what I want, she won't get what she wants. And now we're going to start. Watch the interviews trickle in over time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's,
oh, my God.
Regular head of hopper. Okay. So how are we on the smoking front, Scotty?
Doing great.
Really?
Yes.
How long has it been?
Almost over 3 weeks now.
All right. You wearing the patch
Tuesday.
Today?
Today's 3 weeks, actually.
You wearing the patch?
No.
When is the last time you wore the patch?
I think it was like this weekend or something.
Did you wear the patch when you go out drinking?
Yeah, this right. weekend I did.
And so when you put the patch on, you go out drinking, you find that quells your cigarette cravings?
Well, the cravings just aren't there, which is good because, you know, I put it on and it kind of keeps me from having them. I
all right. Because, you know, we've held off on having more kissing auditioners come in because I wanted to see how this first couple of weeks. And we've got Chad who's willing to do it. But we haven't, I had some people email me and ask if they wanted, you know, if we wanted them to come in. We've sort of held off on that. I wanted to see how the first 10 or 12 days went. So you feel like you're going strong?
Yeah.
See, so you don't feel...
You don't feel a little weak at all?
You don't feel... No.
Don't feel
the urge to give in?
I don't feel like I'm going to be kissed.
Okay.
Anytime soon.
See, here's the thing, is that no one believes you.
I know. Well, what are you supposed to do? It's
well, and we obviously you've done some weird brainwashing thing to your wife, so we can't ask her.
Oh, I think we know what that's all about. Well, she's a smoker. Of course, she's going to cover for him. I mean, smokers. I mean, they junkies stick together. I know how that works.
Junkies.
No, it's true. I mean, no. I mean, I'm just saying. You know, I'm just saying. Addicts tend to cling together about these things. I absolutely understand. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying I understand how that functions. I bet if we were to do, I mean, do you feel like you're being absolutely truthful and upfront with us about it?
Absolutely.
Because I think if we did a spot poll of the audience right now, we may or may not even do that, but I think if we did an Insta poll of the audience, I'd say probably 80% of the people suspect that you are lying to us.
Well, and he sounds pretty believable, but I don't know. You've sounded believable in things before, and then it turns out you've been lying.
Well, because he's a former salesperson, so of course nothing he says can be trusted. You know,
I don't even know.
No.
See?
Are you kidding me? You're lying to the Peter Criss woman about being like a player with CBS Radio.
I'm not really lying to her.
Fabricating a job
title. If I was
title.
To tell her the truth and say, listen, I'm the guy that gets
If I was to tell her the truth.
At AM 970.
If I were to tell her the truth.
Which is an AM station that has maybe, you know, a few 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 listeners, maybe, max. She would say it.
Thanks for the boost in confidence.
Thanks for that,
no,
Scotty.
I mean,
that's what
I'm telling you. If I was to tell her that, that's probably the same result I'd get from her.
And from where are you even drawing that information?
Yeah,
I know, because it's probably more like 3,000 listeners.
Wait, you're doing that thing again. You're trying to be Jason Sporbert.
He's trying to be funny.
You're trying to be Jason Sporbert again. Yeah, you got to stop that.
He is a hero.
Yeah, you got to not do that. So I'm saying if we were to canvass the audience right now, I'm guessing there's probably, you have, I would maybe like a 20% believability factor among the people.
20% believability?
I'd
put myself at 60.
Well, you can't put yourself at anything.
No, see, if you weren't guilty, you would have put yourself at zero.
At 100, see?
100.
That's what that is. That, you know what that is right there? That's the truth trying to escape from you. All right, we'll do it right now. We will do it. Here's the phone number. We'll do a little Insta poll right now. We'll see what the people say. And so the question simply is that we're not going to ask people to gauge, you know, how confident they feel in your lack of smoking. We'll simply ask the people if they believe you are lying or not about having smoked in the past 3 weeks. All right, here's the phone number. We'll do that right now. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We will do a Rick Emerson Insta poll. Simply, the question is, do you believe that Scotty is lying about the last time he smoked? Now, is your wife being supportive about this?
Very much.
She's being positive. She's being a good influence.
Is she being positive by smoking around you?
Not smoking around me.
Okay. She's.
Imagine she.
She's being a rock of support
when I'm not around her. But as far as when I'm around, we see each other usually after like 5-6 o'clock.
Now, when you were a smoker, where were the places that you would smoke? Because you said that you don't smoke in your truck, and you said you don't smoke in your house. So where are the places that you smoke?
Like a bar or something.
But I mean, you know, if you're at home and you want to smoke, where were the places you would smoke? Just go on the porch?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, I'm going to make two columns here, and then we'll go to the phones. I'm going to make two columns. One is Scotty lying. Scotty truthing, as you might say. Truthing. All right, excellent. So we'll just do a little poll here, and we'll see where the people come down. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Where fall ye on the Scotty smoking question?
I don't know, but I'm curious to know if he's the same guy from Just Shoot Me, the big, tall, bald guy. He sounds just like him.
I have done my cricket sound effect. I don't think I've ever... That's the David Spade show, right?
Yeah.
I'm suspecting he's not that guy, sir.
All right. Sounds just like
him. He's neither tall nor bald.
He's all disappointed. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Hello.
Hello, how are you guys?
What's up?
I believe Scotty.
Okay. And so
believe.
Stop. Is that just based on tone of voice? Is that based on meeting him, talking to him, based on your own experience?
I really believe he doesn't want to be kissed, but I'm having another call, so he'll let you
go. All right, thank you. Bye now. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. I think he's probably lying on it, if only because we can't talk to his wife and confirm it.
All right, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Hi, Rick Emerson show. Do you believe Scotty or do you not believe Scotty?
I love Scotty, and I believe everything Scotty says.
Is this Mrs. J?
No.
Is this Kara?
No.
Is this someone? Are you related to Scotty in some way?
Not at all.
It's his sister.
Scotty,
I am his biggest fan.
Scotty, do you know who this is?
Sounds familiar.
You know,
you're lying right there.
You know me.
Are you related to Scotty?
Me? No.
she says as though asking if she's got hepatitis. No! What are you talking about? All right, you believe that Scotty is telling the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Bye now.
I don't know who that is.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson. You're on the Rick Emerson show. Do you believe Scotty or not?
Well, actually, I think that if he is not smoking cigarettes, then he's using another form of tobacco, like chew or something along those
That's an
lines.
Interesting
like
question.
Snus or whatever that stuff is.
That's a good question. Other than the patch, are you getting nicotine from anywhere else?
See, my teeth? No.
So you're not doing any alternative method of nicotine intake except for the patch?
No. After 4 days, you don't have the craving anymore.
And you know
it's
this
been
from
3 weeks.
You know
after
this from
4 days?
Yeah,
people go
that's
their entire
true.
Lives still craving cigarettes.
Seriously, Pittenberger quit like 9 years ago, and he says he craves one every day.
Every day he
yeah.
craves one.
Every single
day. Yeah, now I know he's lying. I mean, there's too much hesitation, and, you know, the craving does not go away.
I don't even think that, clinically speaking, I don't even think that you get the tobacco out of your system for, like, 10 days, something like that. I don't even think your body flushes it out for a week. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio show. Hello.
You know, I think he's lying through his teeth, and the only person that's lying more is the girl that said that she wasn't related to him.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you, sir. All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Do you believe Scotty and his smoking claims?
Absolutely. I am very impressed with him. He is, you know, congratulations, Scotty. I'm real proud of you, man.
Thank you.
I keep waiting for a punchline.
And a real gentleman and a scholar.
Well, okay, there you go. All right. It's funny how when somebody says they believe you, I'm instinctively then waiting for some sort of follow-up joke. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, I believe Scotty and more Scotty, less Sarah. Bye.
Well, that wasn't very nice.
That wasn't very nice.
Scotty will belch on the air. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, there's no way Sporbert's telling the truth here.
Thanks.
So that's a yes.
That's wonderful.
These people that are calling, I mean, really, is it a family reunion at his house or something like that?
I really don't know. It is tempting to do an entire segment someday of just Scotty J fans and just sort of see what lurks inside there.
I bet you there's more haters out there.
Hey, I'm not a hater, Scotty. You gave yourself away when you put yourself at 60%.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that is just weird. When
why would you not say
100%?
I don't know, because I'm kind of a goof, but here's the deal. You were giving me like
I'm kind
zero.
Kind of a goof.
You were giving me 0% or 90%.
OJ's kind of a bad guy.
I guess I was saying I'm worth at least 60. That's what I was saying.
Okay, how about this? You say you haven't smoked a cigarette, but did you smoke maybe a quarter of a cigarette?
No.
Have you smoked any portion of a cigarette?
No, I have not smoked.
I have not smoked any. Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right. We'll finish up the evening. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Is Scotty lying or telling the truth?
Has he gained weight?
That's a good question.
I think I have.
It's hard to say because we see him every day, so
yeah.
I can't really say.
And he's always had like the.
No, I was looking in the mirror. The
he's
other
always
night
been kind of
like,
pudgy.
What the
he's
heck?
Not
no, he's got the gut though.
Yeah,
he sucks
in.
He sucks in the gut. No, he sucks in the gut. And when he doesn't, if he doesn't tip his chin up, he's got the waddle.
Okay,
oh, I do not.
It's true. It's totally true. Look, I'm got. I know. I'm flabby too.
My neck is totally tight.
No, my neck is totally tight. Could you be more of a dude? Yes.
Well, if he's not gaining weight, I think he's lying. Because the last time I tried to smoke, I just shoveled junk food into my face constantly.
That is a good question, Scotty. What are you compensating with?
I've been eating a lot of junk food. Yes, and I bought two boxes full of the breakfast bars for like in the morning
right.
And stuff. And so,
all right. Thank you. All right. We'll finish this out and then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
That's a
wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you. All right. Two more. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Do you believe Scotty or not?
I absolutely do not believe that he is telling the truth. It takes usually up to about 6 months for the nicotine to fully be out of your system.
See, that's what I'm saying. There's no one you say that.
I've never heard that.
Out of your system.
I've never heard 4 days.
They say 6 months.
No, no. Me, after 4 days, I'm usually over the hump of the of
what,
a
you like
bad,
a, some bionic
you know,
immune system that flushes it out of your, you know, like 100 times faster than everybody else? All right. Yeah, no. Are you a smoker, sir?
No, I am not.
All right.
But I've had plenty of family and friends that have smoked and have quit smoking. They say it usually takes about 4 to 6 months. And if you're craving after, that is a purely psychological addiction, because it takes about a good half a year to fully get rid of the physical craving.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir. All right, two more here, and then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Do you believe Scotty?
Scotty is an angel. He would never lie.
Martians. Yeah, Martian fans.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Final call. Do you believe Scotty?
Yes.
No, no follow-up to that? Scotty,
no
your defenders are real dullards. I mean, there's just no getting around it. Yes, sir?
Yeah, I think he's telling the truth, because I don't think he's full of himself. Hello?
Hi.
Well, no,
that doesn't make any sense, sir.
Well, no, he doesn't care what he says. I think he says what's on his mind, whether it's... You know, it turns out to be stupid or not. That's why I said to keep it honest.
Okay, I knew there was humor in this call if we poked far enough down. All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right, there you go. All right, we'll take a break here. Yeah, I think there's a common thread with people who call up to defend you, Scotty. There's a whole lot of lead paint chip eating going on.
Oh, Jay's innocent.
Oh, come on.
Am I going to have to get a big picture of Jason Sporbert and put it in the studio with you? All right, no. Back after this with Tim Riley, Mr. Skin, top five slow dance songs from the 70s, and our hunt for the second worst story ever. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. guitar is set so low. Fantastic.
There's always a silver lining to everything.
He doesn't set fires in the call screening booth, so he's fine with us. All right. 503-733-2970. He doesn't appear to have all right. What am I I don't know. I just got all these emails that happened during the break. I'm sort of through. All right, we got Mr. Skin coming up here in a few. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Now, do I have breaking news? Live, local, relevant. John McCain has scheduled his fundraiser at the Heatman Hotel today. Also, his other fundraiser in Seattle, his people say that he has to stay in Washington and work out details to fund pet projects. Senator McCain is a leader in ethics reform and wants to be back in Washington to lead debate on the issues.
Uh-huh.
He's all done. We know it.
No, he's finished.
He's washed up.
Beyond finished.
So all of you waiting at the Heatman Hotel for John McCain,
go home.
He's pulled a Ross Perot on you.
You really? Meaning?
Well, he's disappointed you all.
Yeah.
By saying he's actually in the race when he knows deep down he's finished.
Man, well, you know, and if he does the Perot, he'll totally pull out and then he'll come back in at the last minute. That's what people don't remember about Ross Perot.
He broke America's heart.
He left. And he still pulled like 18%, something like that. I mean, and that was after he dropped out of the race and then he came back in and he still, I think, if I remember correctly, I think in 92 the differential was actually so thin that Ross Perot himself could have actually made the difference. He was sort of the nadir of his time, because I think even after dropping out and coming back in, he pulled almost 20% in the general election.
But here's something to make everybody feel a little bit better, and this is kind of a callback to something we've been discussing. Free Hermiston watermelons will be given away at Pioneer Courthouse Square Friday.
Fantastic.
Frank Harkenrucker, the former mayor of Hermiston, not the real one, is giving away Hermiston-grown watermelons. Yes, he's giving away cantaloupe and potatoes. Oh, they grow potatoes there. I don't know if I'd want a Hermiston potato.
I don't want anything from Hermiston.
Well, they're
at
free.
All.
And, these are 5-pound potato sacks. They're donated by Bud Rich Potato. So they want everyone to come to realize the deliciousness of things grown in Hermiston.
Taste the great, wonderful aroma
come
of Hermiston.
Come taste our spark.
All right.
Watermelon, cantaloupe, and potatoes.
We will rejoin Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth in just one moment. It's 503-733-2970. And then we'll get, actually, Mr. Skin here in a second. I want to read this one email about Scotty. This says, Rick, here's why I don't believe Scotty. I smoked for 5 years and quit, and had about a month where I had nasty lung clearing going on, along with everyone else who's ever quit smoking and talked to me about it. This happens to everyone. Scotty has smoked since I was born, and he has none of that. I say it's a farce to your well-meaning attempts to help improve his health. That's what I'm saying, Scotty. This is an insult. It's a slap in the face to our well-meaning attempts to help you quit smoking, to the charity, the love given to you by the Rick Emerson Show and audience, attempting to help you beautify the inside of your lungs, sir. All right. We will continue with Scotty, Tim Riley, all that here in a second. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from MrSkin.com, the online celebrity nudity database, our good friend Mr. Skin. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
It's going fantastically. I just had my fourth cup of coffee for the day, so all is coming up roses.
Okay, good. Well, I wanted to let you know that last time I talked to you when the movie I Know Who Killed Me with Lindsay Lohan, they wouldn't let any reviewers see the movie ahead of time, so I couldn't give you the full scoop on whether she gets naked, but now that the movie's come out and the general public's seen it, my skin scouts have seen it, and all I can say is Lindsay Lohan follows the shameless tradition of Jessica Alba in Sin City and Rose McGowan in Grindhouse as strippers who don't strip in a movie. It's a very bad thing. I'd like this to end.
Apparently there's some scene in a strip club where everybody is nude but her.
I know, and it drives me nuts. And I think that, let's put it this way, the movie made about $3 million its opening weekend. I think it would have made a lot more if she did get naked. But there was a reason the critics weren't allowed to see it. But I do want to report, don't expect to see Lindsay Lohan naked in I Know Who Killed Me, even though she plays a stripper in the movie. So.
Hollywood Reporter actually said that no matter what else comes out for the remainder of 2007, that I Know Who Killed Me is, in fact, the worst movie of the year.
Yeah, it's not.
not doing too well with the critics. So, and I can't even say good things about it because she doesn't get naked.
Yeah.
So. Also, if you're a fan of the TV show Without a Trace, you might know an actress named Rosalind Sanchez, and she plays Elena Delgado on that show. She's also in the Rush Hour movies with Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, the hot Hispanic babe. And she had never done a nude scene, but this week on DVD is a movie called Yellow where she plays a stripper. And guess what? She actually strips. This is very exciting. And it's one of those straight-to-DVD movies, but... for fans of her from Rush Hour and from Without a Trace, the good news is Rosalind Sanchez is not yellow when it comes to nudity, and her movie Yellow is on DVD new this week.
Excellent.
And finally on DVD is, remember the He-Man Muscle Fest 300 that was in theaters a few months back? That's out on DVD this week. And between all the guys with their shirts off, there's actually two real good scenes. There's a bunch of girls naked during a scene that's pretty hot, and then
and there's that slow motion like sex scene.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And then Lena Headey, 22 minutes in, bears her breastplate in this. So it's a movie, though. There will be a lot of guys in various stages of undress. There are a few good girl nudity moments for fans of female celebrity nudity in the movie 300, which is out on DVD this week.
Excellent. Always a pleasure, my friend. Check out MrSkin.com. We will talk to you again, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Bye. There goes Mr. Skin. I heard that whole thing. I think we've had this discussion already, but about 300, about whether all those six-packs were CGI'd onto the guys, which had to have been the case.
They were, yeah.
Were they?
Yeah, we included that.
That's right, because we had that whole discussion with your friend that wanted to get like a six-pack, like like
six-pack tattoo.
Tattooed onto his beer gut, which is just wonderful. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, let's go. Oh. Darn it all to heck. Let's go to the courtroom where Phil Spector's daughter took the stand today in defense of her dad.
Did you eat dinner with him during those periods of time?
Yes, my mother would cook and we would go back to our house and he would eat dinner with us and we would watch all in the family. Okay.
Okay. I can't understand a single word she's saying. Doesn't matter.
So Donald Rumsfeld took the stand today.
That's what keeps those 8,000 listeners glued, Tim.
That's
is
great.
That kind of specificity in our news reporting.
Mistakes, yes. Cover up, no, says Donald Rumsfeld.
Uh-huh.
Truly delusional, as he always has been. He was speaking in Washington today. He said in numerous errors, but he has no evidence in cover up in the Tillman case whatsoever.
I know that I would not engage in a cover up. I know that no one
no,
in the White
ever.
House suggested such a thing to me. I know that the gentlemen sitting next to me are men of enormous integrity and would not participate in something like that.
Oh, yes. I have.
You know, I despaired of ever hearing from him again. I didn't think we were going to get a chance to have more gold from Donald Rumsfeld.
I think that's enough out of him.
Yeah, really.
Let's talk to Dick Cheney, who admits he was wrong. Well, once, anyway. He told Larry King last night he thought a series of milestones reached in Iraq would undermine the growing insurgency there.
That clearly didn't happen. I think the insurgency turned out to be more robust.
That's it. That's it.
That's
we get 1.8 seconds.
So let's hear that one more time, because it's so important.
That clearly didn't happen. I think the insurgency turned out to be more robust.
Fantastic. If you listen closely, you can hear the sound of fresh reptile blood being pumped into his new heart or whatever it is, that thing that they gave him there.
Cheney said if given the opportunity, he would send troops into Iraq and Afghanistan again.
I firmly believe, Larry, that the decisions we've made with respect to Iraq and Afghanistan have been absolutely the sound ones.
You know, and he's got that speaking in the low, sinister voice just down to an art form. It really is a thing that he's absolutely mastered. Jesus, that guy's creeping. Creeping. I can't talk today. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, I told Scotty I was calling to defend him, but I'm really not.
Ha, well done, sir. Way to sneak past Scotty's iron-wrought defenses.
I figured out a story, though. All those years of smoking, he was a fake smoker, never inhaled. He just thought he looked cool.
Now, well, somebody pointed out that Scotty, in all of his preceding, his previous jobs, all the jobs he had before this one, they were variations on being a salesperson. So it is really difficult to gauge. I mean, there really is no way to... Like, I don't even know how you would detect whether or not he's telling the truth. You know what I mean? Like, I have not... Normally, you know, somebody lies to you and you can sort of tell, like, they shift nervously or, you know, they sort of look away or their voice kind of quavers a little bit. But it's like he's just such a sleazy weasel in so many ways. Anyway, no offense, Scotty. Just because... And I'm not blaming Scotty for being a weasel-like deceiver. I understand that having been a salesperson, it is ingrained into him. I'm just saying... there's really all the ways in which we would normally tell whether somebody was telling us the truth. Our ability has been stripped away. We just have no way to deduce anything approaching the reality when we talk to him. So it's all very difficult. All right, that's Michael. All right, here's Tim Riley.
One more from Dick Cheney. He says the groundwork has been laid for success in Iraq.
The real test is whether or not the strategy that was put in place for this year will in fact produce the desired results.
The Iraq war is going to cost $1 trillion. A trillion dollars. Tony Snow says it's hard to determine how much a war is going to cost.
But you're assuming that the wars move in neat, tidy, and predictable arcs, and unfortunately, they're not activities that lend themselves to the normal ebb and flow of a budget process. It's one of the reasons why you have supplemental budget requests.
Huh? Supplemental budget requests.
Yes, could I please have a $1 trillion supplemental budget to finish up?
That's fantastic. All right.
Mayor Giuliani is offering his proposal for health care, which he describes as not socialized medicine.
The right direction for us is American principles. So I would extend...
Sounds like a cigarette.
...a very, very strong incentive for Americans to buy their own health insurance. We'd create a $15,000 deduction. We'd urge people to buy their own health insurance.
What is it? I'm sorry. You know, I had like 100 thoughts that came out and they all train wrecked behind my teeth.
But
and
it comes
stopped.
Full circle back to the original problem, which isn't sold. So people can buy their own health insurance.
But seriously, when he's saying, well, what are we going to do? We're going to give people an incentive to buy their... Right now, people who don't have their own health insurance just die horribly and slowly alone in a flop house. Mm-hmm. If that is not incentive enough to get you to buy health insurance, really, there's no financial break that's going to get you to do that. If the incentive of living isn't enough to do it, I don't really know that giving people, like, a coupon to buy it more cheaply is going to have the intended effect. The love of sweet
Christ. Or
we're
giving people the freedom to die alone.
Yeah, seriously, that's the Oregon health plan. Mm-hmm. Plan to suffer alone. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi. There's actually a device based on science that will tell you whether or not Scotty's been smoking.
And what is that?
It's a carbon monoxide detector. I enrolled in a non-smoking program up at OHSU, and they make you breathe into this thing every day. And when you come up for your I'm on a really rough road. When you come up for your thing, they make you breathe into this little box, and the way that it detects the amount of carbon monoxide in your breath. If you have smoked within the last 24 hours, your carbon monoxide will be higher than 6 parts per million.
So that's not a thing. So it doesn't just pick up old smoke or whatever in your lungs?
Or if you're in a smoky bar or something?
You know what? I don't know. It didn't, you know, I mean, I went to lots of smoky bars, and it didn't register that as being...
Interesting.
And I mean, hey, it's the thing that they use at the non-smoking clinic up there to determine whether or not you've been smoking.
And so they have this at OHSU, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you call the non-smoking... They've got, you know, those ads on the radio all the time for, you know, are you trying to quit smoking?
Right, right.
That's the... That place, that section of the hospital up there, they have these things. And I mean, it works on the really simple principle of, you know, the carbon monoxide doesn't let go of your hemoglobin the way CO2 does.
All right, so it just stays in your lungs. All right, that's fascinating. All right, thank you, sir. I appreciate the tip.
And it works great. So do that. I want to hear Scotty get kissed by a man.
All right, as do we all, my friend. Fantastic. This email just says, Rick, why don't you hook Scotty up to a lie detector? Well, I don't even...
Well, we've been looking for one. I don't even know where we would find one.
I don't know. You can't, because you can't just buy one of those.
That seems like something that Diana Dantan would just have in, like, a storage closet somewhere,
seriously?
Doesn't it?
Really? Along with, like, a hot branding rod that she used to extort the truth out of some KGB agent? Sir, can't you just see her? No offense. Can't you just see Diana, like, a full-length leather coat and, like, a mask just beating a guy senseless with a leather sap? I will let you see your family before you die if you cooperate. That's fantastic. Tell me what I want to know and your death will be swift. That's great. Well, they have those ones at Sharper Image, but that's like a vocal thing. Those are those ones that those lie detectors, like the vocal stress analyzers.
But I believe that Scotty could beat such a vocal test.
No, I don't know. He'd totally need the one that, like, they strap across your chest. Like, we totally need to...
We need somebody who knows how to, like, actually read it.
Well, and somebody who actually has one. So, like, we had that guy. Who was that guy who advertised with us years ago? We had some private detective who advertised with us. Maybe he'd have one.
I don't know. Scotty would be one of those people, you know, who you convince yourself so much that you didn't do something that
he'd be the O.J.
the truth.
He's the O.J. Simpson of smoking. It wasn't me. It was Charlie. And that's the one where they give you the control questions, too, where they have you, you know. And the guy sits and he administers the whole thing. I don't know. Maybe I should email that guy. I'll ask that the PI. Well, there's got to be somebody. I mean, if there's like some guy who, who would have a lie detector other than a cop, though? I mean, is that like a thing that like do lawyers have that? Or like a bail bondsman wouldn't have it, but like some guy like a...
Maybe a lawyer would.
Tim, who do you know that has a lie detector?
Nobody, but I'm going to work on it.
I think that sounds like a total making the question go away kind of answer.
No, I'm going to work on it right now.
Really? Fantastic. Let me just put this into my wife found something that will test Scotty's urine. But even for me,
that's kind of gross.
It's a little distasteful, even for me. Detector. Let's see. Lie detector. Now I'm just getting schematic devices, schematic. You know, diagram, like how to build your own at home. Let's see here. I'm putting lie detector into here, and I'm just getting a whole lot of, like, how to beat a lie detector.
Rent polygraph equipment.
Oh!
Where did you find that?
Polytest.org.
Really?
Global Polygraph Network now offers for rent a vintage 1970s polygraph instrument. It is mostly functional.
It is 90 to 95.
Or calibrated.
Mostly functional. That's wonderful.
It's 90 to 90% accurate. It costs $200 a day.
That's what. Okay. Hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
How's it going?
Hey, what's up?
Oh, nothing. You know, I don't know if you've seen it in your workplace because you guys are in your studio, but there's always those posters about under circumstances businesses are legally allowed to give polygraph tests.
Uh-huh.
And so that means they're available to use at businesses. I'm sure you could just hire somebody that knows how to read it and do it. I'm assuming fairly. I don't know how much, but it would be worth it.
But, I mean, I don't even know. Like, that's not a thing you can even look up in the Yellow Pages. Like, there's no lie detector in the phone book. Like, I wouldn't even know.
It costs $350.
What's, I'm sorry?
Have you heard of Google?
Yeah, but, I mean, I just Googled it, but it's like all I'm getting is how to build your own and how to beat one.
Oh, sorry, I was being a jerk. Oh, no, that sucks. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
That's all I got.
Thank you. Thanks for contributing nothing.
So they will give you a polygraph test in the Portland area for $350.
No, who will? This company?
This company.
Is this the vintage 1970s polygraph machine?
It is.
Yes.
Now, this is the Global Polygraph Network. This is the Global Polygraph Network.
Nerd. Hi, you're on the right camera.
There's a polygraph place in Salem.
Well,
really?
They've done over 300 since 2001.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
If we could build our own polygraph, can we run like about maybe, half of an amp through it, you know, so that every time he does lie, you know?
So when he just sees this, he just gets some electrical surge to his testicles.
A really loud buzzer and just, you know, elevating mild shocks as it goes through.
I'm a big fan of that idea,
just
sir.
Just for fun.
No, of course.
Well, I think we'd have to ask Mrs. J's permission. She'd be the one who...
She could administer it.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye now. Hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
So I've got $10 to help you guys rent the polygraph for Scotty.
No, wait. I sense, is this another donation drive?
No. Not a donation drive, but I don't see the three of you fine individuals sporting $200 between the three of you to stunt Scotty on his smoking cue. So... I got $10.
See, I'm wondering to see if we can find like a private detective or a law firm. We could maybe trade it out or something, or we could we'll stick one of the AEs on them and have them.
Worst case scenario, you've got the rental, so I would be happy to give information to get $10 towards it.
Scotty, would you be happy if we got a private dick to come investigate you? Get it's private. No, I'm sorry, I could have made that funnier. I'm sorry, Scotty. Maybe your truth-telling, maybe... No, wait, hold on.
Oh.
Scotty, would you like to be probed?
Would you like to be probed by a private dick?
I couldn't even... even make it. I couldn't even hold it together long enough to deliver the joke.
And this whole thing started out with kissing. That's progressively gotten worse for the young man.
Well, he was asking for it.
All right.
Hi, you're on the Scotty's nose meant yes, Tim. Oh. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
First of all, I got to tell you, I live in Southeast, and I've only used this thing one time, but I do have a lie detector test out in my garage.
Yeah, how many times have you, I mean, if you live in Southeast, you don't really need a lie detector so much as you need a gun.
Well, it's a big, you know, first of all, I'll tell you how I used it is because we had a meth house across the street from us, and I thought this guy broke into my house, so I put him, hooked him up to it and stuff. And it's a vice and a hammer.
So it's sort of a casino-style lie detector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
sort of a fetch the gimp kind of lie detector.
When,
yeah.
I mean, you have to kind of determine, you have to determine whether he's telling the truth or not. But when you come down with the hammer, it usually comes out.
That's the Abu Ghraib lie detecting system.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Greetings.
Hey, what's up?
I just wanted to let you know that when I was in Reed as a psychology graduate, one of our labs was actually hooking up a lie detector to people with, you know, the strap around the chest to measure respiration and the measure the sweat stuff.
Right.
So I bet a cookie you could get a Reedie to come in who's actually run it and actually knows how to do it.
Oh, boy. That's just, I don't even know that it's worth it at that point if I have to be civil to somebody from Reed.
They smell like patchouli and armpits. Mm-hmm.
So you're so, okay, so that's, you know, that's an interesting question, though, is like, would a college, like a university psychology class or something, would they actually have a lie detector? Like if I found some Psych 101 class or some...
I think you have to get a little higher than 101.
But you know what I mean. If I went to a university and went to their psychology class and said, hey, do you have a polygraph?
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Totally. And I know for a fact that Reed does have them, and they do teach people how they work.
All right. I'll make a note of that. Excellent. Reed. Maybe it's like a last resort. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Got a pencil handy?
Yes, I do, sir.
Lucinda Gardner, licensed intern polygraph examiner, 971.
Now hold on. Let's. Who is this? Who is this person? Before we give out a number over the air.
This is out of the Yellow Pages.
Okay.
So it's available to anyone.
Okay.
Under polygraph and lie detection in your handy Dex Yellow Page.
Lucinda Gardner.
Uh huh.
Okay. This is in the Yellow Pages, you're saying?
It is.
All right. What's the number?
971
207-6385. All right.
Or Stone Calf Polygraphs.
All right. Well, hold on. Ooh. We'll start with the first one. We'll start with the first one, and then we'll work our way down. Just give me the name of the well, like where you looked this up in the, was it under polygraph in the Yellow Pages?
Yes, it was.
And this is the Portland Yellow Pages?
Yes, it is.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for the tip.
All righty.
All right. God bless you, sir. All right. We'll finish these out and then.
I can't wait to see him get polygraphed.
It'd be worth it. It'd be worth it even if he ends up passing it somehow. I mean, and the great thing about the polygraph is.
We have it for the entire day, and we can ask other people questions.
And we can ask Scotty anything we want. I'm already thinking of questions to ask. Oh, this is fantastic. I don't care if I have to pay for this myself. This will be worth its weight in gold. We'll finish this. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, you know, last night when I was having a cigar with Scotty there at El Gaucho.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah, he bought a handgun from me. Just thought I'd warn you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't aware that this call contained humor. All right. Thank you. Bye now. All right. So should we break or should we merge? What should we do? Because we got the top five, we got Tim, and we got the second worst story.
We can merge.
All right. That's fantastic. Scotty's screaming at me over the screen to break.
Why?
I wonder why.
Oh, yeah.
End this segment and break, he says. Hi, Rick Emerson Show right here on KCMD Portland. Hello, sir.
Hey, dude.
Hey, what's up?
What about going to, like, Lewis and Clark Law School, getting somebody that's, like, studying law?
Now,
they might have some kind of a polygraph or something.
Would
over
they,
there.
Like a remote?
Would they have access to that?
I would imagine, you know, training people working in the law field, you'd have to.
That's true. I guess. That's true. I guess if you're going to end up being a lawyer or something, you're going to work.
Right.
Hey, what about a? Well, the police probably wouldn't do it though because they're a public entity.
I don't know if the police would go for it.
They probably won't do a radio like a wacky radio stunt.
You know, like you could get some grad students or something out there.
No, that's a great idea.
Right.
I do like the idea of going to either a legal department of a university or maybe the psychology department of a university where they do train to use these sorts of things in their professional lives.
And Lewis and Clark specializes in law, so there you go.
That's cool. Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Isn't that where Monica Lewinsky went? Didn't she go to Lewis and Clark?
I think so. She went to one of those local schools.
I got somebody that claims to have topless photos of her, you know.
Oh, they claimed they would have given them to you.
Well, no, because this person, and it's somebody we all know, claims to have topless photos of Monica Lewinsky, claims not to show them to me just because he knows it torments me to know that.
Someone we also know used to be an exotic male dancer.
See, but now do you know who that is?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah, do you want me to tell you?
Well, no, hold on. Let's stop here. We're going to continue with
and
the calls.
And if you're listening right now, yes, it's you.
So, wait, someone who works at CBS Radio Portland was an exotic dancer?
I'm not saying that they work here. I'm saying that we know them.
You just looked away when you said that, though. Now we're all like amateur lie detectors. So it is someone who works at CBS Radio Portland.
No.
Are you lying?
Maybe.
Well, then don't. I mean, how do I put it? Just say maybe then if it's possible.
Okay, it's maybe possible.
Okay.
That.
You were lying when you just said no, though. So it is somebody at CBS Radio Portland. Now, keep in mind, I don't know the answer to this, and I realize that you can't reveal this, but I wonder if this is an on-air personality. And this is a male exotic dancer.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it was an, and I don't know who this was.
Yeah, this is just purported, but it's
purported to you by the person or by somebody else?
No, by somebody else who actually knows for a fact.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Is it somebody who works in this building?
One of the buildings.
Oh, so
you
not
can't narrow
building.
It down that much. I was just saying that in passing.
Oh, now I'm fascinated with the idea that somebody we worked with is a male stripper. Which is fine. It's a perfectly decent profession. It's legal. I'd do it if I could. You know, my brother talked about being a male. My brother,
the one that's all muscly?
Yeah, my brother James, when he was in college, you know, he didn't have a lot of money, and the GI Bill, the military, they sort of spin this yarn that they're going to pay for your entire college career, and they really don't. I mean, it really is like... It's like a publisher's clearinghouse thing where very few people get their entire college paper. They paid for a chunk of it, but not all of it. And he just didn't have a lot of money. And so I swear to God, my brother James, for the longest time, had weighed becoming a gay. He'd weighed becoming a stripper for men. Stripping at parties for men or at a male strip club.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had researched it a little bit because he thought about becoming like... A Chippendales-type dancer.
That sounds like it would make a lot of money. If I was a guy, I'd do that.
He talked to some guys who were strippers, and there was a guy he talked to who had stripped for men and for women, and the guy said that, like, if you are a man who strips for other men, it's like five times the money. And he, you know, my brother, at that point, especially, I don't know if it's still the case, but at that point, he was in really good shape. I mean, he worked out a lot. He was just, you know, he might be a good-looking guy, very muscular. And so he had weighed very strongly becoming a man who stripped for other men just to pay his way through college. And he was about ready to do it, and my mom heard about it and just freaked. My mom just went mental. It was like you could have just knocked her over with a feather when she heard about that. So he decided not to do it. But he was on the brink of doing it. Oh, I think I just hung up on somebody. Sorry. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. You know, there needs to be an incentive to get Scotty to do the lie detector test, though. So, like, if he passes it, then you would have to, you know, kiss some guy. Or, like, I don't know, maybe Sarah would have to, like, kiss a lady, like, full on the mouth, and I would get to watch.
Well, I think the incentive for... It's the laugh there that really sells that. That's a whole lot of, you know, that's like a Zodiac call laugh. That's a whole.
Sorry, I had to go down the creepy street there.
No, that's fine. I think the incentive for Scotty, I realize now that your whole call was simply to talk about Sarah kissing a girl, but I think that the incentive for Scotty would be to clear his name because, like, we just did a spot poll and the majority of the audience feels that he is lying to us. So. The incentive for Scotty is that, you know, we would have to eat a little bit of crow there. We'd have to eat some humble pies, they say.
I see how it is.
And admit that we were wrong and that he has held up his end of the bargain. And really to avoid the specter of being kissed by a man, that's the other thing.
Well, we all tried to avoid that, at least getting caught doing it.
All right.
I'm done.
Bye now.
Bye.
That guy's creepy and great. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, this is Benjamin from the Mighty Southeast.
Hi. What's up?
How's it going?
Hey.
2003 National Academy of Sciences report says that roughly 99.6% of positives, those failing the test, would probably be false positives.
So
would you like to know why polygraphs are not admissible in court and generally not trusted?
Yeah, but that's not true.
That's the National Academy of Sciences, buddy.
Because you're saying that they're false 100% of the time.
No, but a high degree. See, what it does is it measures physiological responses like blood pressure, pulse, respiration, and galvanic skin response. And those are all things that escalate during times of stress and tension, like when you're calling into a talk radio show right now. I am experiencing a bit of pressured speech. My pulse is up. My respirations are up. So if I were hooked up to a polygraph right now, I'd be flying off the handle. I'm not lying about anything. It's just that you're under stress. You're being asked questions that are stressful. You're going to get a whole lot of false positives.
Yeah, but I think, first of all, that's probably A. I mean, I will tell you this, just based on my own knowledge, the number of cops I know and have known in my life. I'll tell you this. You know who believes polygraph tests is cops. Even if it says you're innocent. If a guy passes a polygraph, cops about 90% of the time will just let the guy walk and move on. So cops put a great deal of store in those. I would also say that the amount of stress that you're under when you're in a squad room and a guy's been beating your testicles with a hose because he thinks you're a double murderer is different than Scotty sitting in here in like a radio studio. And thirdly, I had a third thing. Well, thirdly, I think even if you assume that you are stressed out, period, taking a polygraph, it's different levels of stress. In other words, the stress that you just feel by taking a polygraph and then the stress when they say, now, is it true that you had relations with your sister? I think there are two different levels of stress there. And so that's how they establish a baseline early on.
Well, what you can do, and a lot of these pages, I'll bet you, that are telling you how to beat a polygraph, is they ask you control questions in the beginning, and you can actually manipulate your blood pressure and your pulse and your respiration and even generate a galvanic skin response to just throw it all out of whack.
I suppose. Scotty doesn't strike me as a real Zen master, though, in terms of controlling his pulse.
Well, I don't know.
He can't even control his mouth, and that's not an autonomic action, so.
The only thing a lie detector is going to tell you is how good a liar somebody is. They can pass it if they want to, and I got to say this for the record, though. I believe Scotty Day, I think he's terrified of being kissed by a man, so I think he's sticking to it.
All right, thank you.
I'm out.
All right.
I did just see an interesting piece of gossip.
Yes? Is it about Scotty?
No, it's about Lindsay Lohan.
Really?
Yeah. It turns out that the police might have a dashboard camera on their police cruiser. There might be a tape of her spazzing out.
That is so great.
I know.
That's fantastic. And you know that'll be released, too. All right. Well, let's finish these, and then maybe we'll roll that top five. Scotty, do you have the top five printed out? You could do that. Maybe we'll roll the top five after this, and then we'll break. Come back with Tim at the bottom. We'll finish these calls. Hi, you're now. I'm obsessed with getting a polygraph machine. Even if it doesn't tell us whether Scotty's lying or not.
Scotty's always relaxed, and we'll ask him a series of very relaxing questions for like 10 minutes.
Control questions.
And then hit him.
Yeah.
And he won't know.
All right. All right. And then we'll ask him if he's ever watched gay pornography for entertainment. Rick, about this email says about the CBS. I've lost my. I've minimized this by mistake. Here we go. About the CBS male stripper. Was it Marconi? Signed, ha ha ha. I'm not going to comment, sir. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Hey.
I think there's companies out there for like human resources for like employees that steal that you can hire to come.
That is true. I should ask Laura Klein.
Employees.
I should have Laura Klein in HR. Scotty's
job in jeopardy thing.
No.
They could just come do it. You know.
That's not going to be what puts Scotty's job in jeopardy. It'll be his repeated failure to book anybody on the program. That's what does that.
I'm just kidding.
No. I'm saying talk to the HR woman, not because this is part of his permanent record, but just because she might know somebody. In other words, and I'm not saying this is the case, but perhaps, and I don't know, but perhaps CBS has had cause to have a polygraph in the past because of somebody who they suspected of thieving.
There you go.
Good idea, sir. I like the way you think. Thank you.
I think Tim sounds like a stripper gone newsman, by the way.
Let's all stop to picture that. All right. Thank you. Bye now.
Thanks.
All right.
Stripper gone newsman.
I would fancy a $5 bill. Okay. One more and then another. Let's see. We'll do this and then line two and then we'll talk to Scotty with the top five. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, that guy that called in and was talking about how it's most of the time wrong and stuff. I would say that
that polygraphing is as much an art as a science, and that it really comes down to the examiner.
Well, I've heard that a lot, actually. It does depend on who's asking the questions and running the results, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I like Sarah's thing about, you know, doing the rope-a-dope, you know, where you string him along with a lot of, you know, soft questions, you know, and then you ask him, you know, when was the last time he was involved with a man or something like that, you know.
That's wonderful. Excellent. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I love this audience. Hi. Let's see. All 8,000 of them. Hi, Nick. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick and Sarah. How are you?
What's
Hello.
Up?
The other day, I went over to the wonderful shop people, had myself a coffee people velvet hammer.
And corner of Oak and Grand. Yes.
Yes, it was fantastic. I'm in the middle of moving, so I'm super stressed out, and I wanted to treat myself, and it's been forever since I had a velvet hammer, and it just made my day.
Fantastic. Thank you for going to one of our sponsors. So they've been there not too long. They just recently went there, the corner of Oak and Grand. Thank you so much. Corner of Oak and Grand, the Shop People. You can find out more at theshoppeople.com. Shop People with a coffee people right inside. How'd you like that art gallery that's right there inside, too?
Oh, it's really nice. There's lots of artwork. There's lots of crafts. There's like a jewelry counter and stuff. But then there's lots of tables in the middle. So it's really, and there's tables outside. It's nice, really kind of relaxing, comforting environment. You can go and sit among some art and have a little coffee people.
Fantastic. And, of course, they've got live music that happens there every now and again. They do art shows as well. And they serve many of our favorite pastries, bagels, cookies, and, of course, Viso is also served at Coffee People inside the Shop People on the corner of Oak and Grand. Excellent. Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you. Ka-ching. All right. There you go. One live read done. All right. Hello, Scotty.
How's it going?
Hi,
Your
Scotty.
Arms are crossed. Your body language indicates nervousness.
And anger.
No, I think what it indicates is it's a little bit chilly in here, actually.
It is a little chilly.
Thank you very much.
Really? Yeah. I don't sense that at all. I don't know. Maybe it's like I'm... I wonder where the...
That's because you've had several cups of coffee, and you're probably sweating now, all that caffeine.
Yeah, I think it's possible. All right. Do you have your top five here?
Right here.
All right. Excellent. Do you have the list? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for today's top five.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire. Wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, 2 days ago we did the top five slow dance songs of the 80s. Yesterday, the top five slow dance songs of the 90s. Today, created by Scotty J, the top five 70s slow dance songs. Now, Scotty, are these songs that you yourself dance to? As a younger man?
Let's take a look here. Probably every song except for one.
All right, excellent. So where when you would go to a dance, was this typically in the high school gymnasium?
I remember junior high, and they're actually tearing down the junior high school, and they're going to build a new one where I went to school.
What was your preferred outfit? What kind of clothing did you wear to a high school dance?
Typically, I think just jeans and an Izod shirt.
Izod. Yeah, that's fantastic. Please tell me that at some point you wore like a rented tuxedo.
Probably for the high school prom.
Was it ruffled? Did it have a ruffled front?
No, it did not.
Was it just a plain old black and white? Tell me it was blue.
No.
Please tell me you wore a powder blue tux.
It was black and white with a red cummerbund and bow tie.
Oh, yep. I can totally see that.
I can absolutely
100% see that.
Yeah, totally with Ray-Ban.
Channeling Tom Cruise.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to... Are there photographs?
Yeah, I should find that picture. You know why? I literally look like I'm probably about 13.
Yeah, I can totally see that. All right. Because you don't look your age now. I can't even imagine how young you look then. All right. These are the top five slow dance songs from the 70s as compiled by Scotty J.
The number six song goes to Yvonne Elliman. I think I pronounced her name right, If I Can't Have You. Now, this got the honorable mention because it's not super slow, but it was from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, and that was huge in my day. I'm going to hit the post.
You can't say I'm going to hit the post as soon as you hear the post coming.
And I don't know that you could do any kind of dancing to this. It's not really fast enough for fast dancing.
Well, this was like, they played a lot of stuff off the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. It didn't matter if it was this or the Bee Gees or whatever, but this was always part of the, you know, slowing down music anyway.
How do you slow dance to this?
I don't think you can dance to this
Maybe
at all.
Maybe you just do a lot of twirling and hugging and hiding in the back
corner. I'm so glad I missed the 70s, really. I mean, that was like
just
7 years old.
Hug.
In the back corner of the dance floor. Yeah. I always remember being
nauseous.
I always remember it was so crowded at these dances that you'd be all totally sweaty, and then you have a slow dance, and you're just, like, dripping wet. I didn't like that.
Dripping wet and reeking of brute.
No, what was it? English?
English leather.
Yes,
please tell
there
me you
go,
wore English
you
leather.
I did, actually.
English leather
it,
or nothing at all?
Stole it from my father's,
You know, doesn't ever... Okay, let's just... Now, Scotty and I, here's the thing. Here's something you need to know, by the way. And we've mentioned this before real briefly, but in the mornings there's sort of two camps here at the show. There's Sarah and I who are in here just reading the internet and just doing nothing in particular. And then Scotty J and Tim sit in the kitchen and they sip their morning beverages and they have croissants or whatever and they talk about housing and the real estate market like adults.
Investing in finances, too.
So, very, you know, Scotty and Tim, who I think it's fair to say have nothing else in common, Scotty and Tim are sort of like a father and son who don't have a whole lot in common but can talk about baseball. You know what I mean? Like sports. They can sit and, like, sports, you know, bridges the gap between many fathers and their sons. Scotty and I have very little in common, but I think we can talk about this. Doesn't every young man's first cologne come out of his dad's medicine cabinet when nobody's looking?
and that's exactly it, when he wasn't looking. You know,
my dad had Old Spice. And the regular Old Spice and then the crystal blue kind that came in the frosted glass. Yeah, well, no. It was Old Spice,
okay.
But it was blue.
Okay.
And it came in a frosted glass bottle, not the regular Old Spice. And then I moved on to English leather, which I wore all the time. And I had the whole set, English leather soap, English leather lotion, English leather aftershave. And then I became a Stetson man for the rest of my high school career. And Stetson, which is the most revolting cologne. I don't mean disrespect to the Stetson people. But in retrospect now, that Stetson, it's like I can still smell it, and it's like a gas fire.
The range. It smells like the range.
It doesn't. It smells like, I mean, it just smells like the inside of somebody's fermenting underpants. I mean, it's just...
It's disgusting.
Yeah, I
so
know.
So how often do you sniff fermenting underpants? Right?
I'm just saying it's a bad, bad... And I think... You notwithstanding, I think cologne is the thing that men have moved on from. I think unless you are either Scotty or one of those guys who hangs outside of the Greek Cuisina on Saturday nights, like waving at his bros who are driving by, trying not to get ticketed for cruising, I don't think guys wear cologne
gold
anymore.
Too.
Yeah. I mean, I own one single, I own a bottle of cologne, or whatever they call it, like cologne, I guess. I don't know the difference between cologne and aftershave, now that I think about it. I own one bottle of cologne that I don't really ever use. I own it, don't ever wear it. Because it's like, why? For what reason? You know what I mean? All right.
Hey, you want to smell good.
The number five down the top five slow dance songs from the 70s.
We're moving on to number five. This song right here, Earth, Wind, and Fire, After the Love is Gone. Now, this played at a million of the dances that I was at. In fact, they were just in town the same weekend that Rush was in town.
Really?
2 weekends ago.
However, did you decide between the concerts?
It was tough. Post.
You know,
I'm going to beat you at this.
You know,
I'm good at
that,
it, believe it or not.
When you do that, you're like that friend of mine who, while at the computer screen and I say something sort of funny, without looking at me, will just go, lol, and continue typing.
Okay.
That's what you sound like.
All right, I need to get rid of the posts and the sporeberts.
Yeah.
And just really change my whole personality.
Yes, try to acquire a new persona the next few days.
I'll work on it this weekend, right?
Now, I don't really know anything about Earth, Wind, and Fire. I don't know anything about most of these songs, actually. And I'm with Sarah when I say that, like, especially that last song actually makes me feel a little ill. A lot of this music just makes me feel sick to my stomach.
No, it's, like, icky.
You don't like Earth, Wind, and Fire? I mean, all their songs are kind of like this, or they have the horns playing, and they're on stage swaying left and right with the horns that they're playing.
I mean,
it's just good time fun. Fits in there with Casey and the Sunshine Band.
I was going to ask if, like, let's just listen to this for a second, because I have a question.
Well, keep in mind, this is a slow song by them.
I know. Now, I was going to say, because... I mean, I'm an idiot suburban kid. I was going to ask, is this like a is this like a white thing or something that I don't understand? But you're like as white as they come. So, I mean, I know there's certain music that, you know, is bigger in a certain cultures and parts of the country and other than others, and that's, you know, whatever, and that's fine. So, I'm just saying, you're unrelentingly white. And so
you're asking, is there more white listeners to Earth, Wind & Fire than there is?
But I'm saying there is music that crosses cultural lines, and then there's music that really doesn't cross cultural lines. Like, I don't really know that you're going to drive to Oakland and find a lot of people who are listening to Lawrence Welk records. It's just not the case. You know what I mean?
My grandpa had that on all the time. I hated it.
Is it a 70s thing? Is it where I grew up? Is it the culture that Sarah and I grew up in? Is it an age thing? This music,
taste in music.
I'll tell you what, it
slides right off my brain and makes no impact.
It's kind of like this: Casey and the Sunshine Band, Kool and the Gang. All these bands create this fun vibe. You know, I guess that was the party and music of the time. Now you listen to the music today that comes out, the kids are listening to, and it doesn't have the same. At least to us, and I'm sure my folks said the same thing about my music. So I'm
just picturing a lot of gold chains and big brandy snifters in front of a roaring fireplace. You know what I mean?
Well, this is just one song. I mean, most of their stuff is hopping fast.
It's
hopping music.
Really? Is it?
Oh, heck yeah. You know, September, the song September.
Hey, just every time I think you can't get whiter. Heck yeah, this is a hopping jam. All right, getting on the top five slow dance songs of the 70s.
Number four goes to a favorite, Leo Sayer. When I Need You, here at AM 970 Solid State Radio. KCMB
Portland.
Don't
do it again.
This one has about a 15-minute intro.
Was just going to say that. Okay.
Isn't that what your editing software is for?
No, actually, it's coming up right about now.
A cozy 10 beats per minute. I think this is actually too slow to dance to.
No, Rick. In seventh grade, this song is
perfect.
You just
sort of stand next to each other?
You got those high heels with a gold
about right. You barely move.
Totally.
You're barely moving left or right.
Sarah and I are both doing that really, like, white rocking back and forth thing.
Hitting her in the face with her afro.
Too slow. How can it be too slow?
It's like the beginning of Whitney Houston's I'll Always Love You. It's just right in the part when she's singing a cappella.
And there's just no tempo to this at all.
And everyone's just kind of standing there.
No, it's flat foot left, flat foot right, flat foot left, flat foot right.
Repeat.
Turn around.
Here's the KJ.
It's like audio ambient. Okay, sorry. I zoned out there for a minute. Is this the guy who did You Make Me Feel Like Dancing?
Yes.
Right. So he can really go up and he can really...
He's diverse.
Yes.
Is there nothing this man can't do?
I think those are the only two songs he ever had, too, by the way.
Counting down the... God, we're only halfway through. Counting down the... It already seems like an eternity. Counting down the...
That actually took away all my caffeine.
Really, you're right. This is sort of like wakefulness be gone. Zest away. Counting down the top five slow dance songs of the 70s.
All right, the number three song goes to... The Donna Summer.
The Donna Summer?
Dim all the lights.
That ought to be one of those wacky blended amens, the Donna's Summer.
Think about her. She always psyched you out with the slow beginning for like a minute.
Is your lisp getting worse?
I think it is, actually. Suffering fucking ass.
Don't do that.
I'm sorry. Think about Donna Summer is this.
I'm going to start fining you a dollar every time you try to be funny.
Oh my God, I'm going to pay to work here.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and after like three jokes, you'll be in debt to
now,
me.
Now, wait a minute. Was that funny?
That was funny.
You owe me a dollar.
Yeah. Doesn't really...
That's what I'm talking about.
Those secret songs where you want to slow down.
This is what I'm telling you. Donna Summer is the queen of psyching you out. All right, slow song, and then a minute into it, it's fast, and you're like, oh, crap.
So how is this number three on the slow song list?
It's a slow song. They always...
Let's stop.
Hey, do a...
Hold on. Just listen. Take a breath. Listen. Now, maybe your dictionary has different words than mine does. This is not a slow song.
Okay, do a poll about you know, ask people if they think this belongs in the slow song thing.
No.
They always play Donna Summer songs that started out slow, so everybody would be in the middle of the room slow dancing, and then all of a sudden, boom, it turns into a fast song.
But wouldn't you say if the majority of the song is fast, then it wouldn't so much be a slow song as it would be a fast song?
This is a half and halfer.
You just created your own new category halfway through the list. And by the way, I'd be careful where you use the phrase, I'd like a half and a halfer. So, just, you know.
All right.
Well, you can see Justin Guarini for nothing at the Clark County Fairgrounds. I just got the warning in the mail.
Really? The warning? Stay away.
The thing is, who
Pretty
is
complimentary
he?
He was in the first season of American Idol.
By the way,
along with those two chicks.
This is how uninteresting this top five is, that Tim is just randomly surfing the net and looking up Justin Guarini news.
No, it came from the Ticketmaster offer that was just sent to me.
An offer to see something for free.
Yes. Fantastic. It's called Idol Returns.
Okay.
I think you should ask folks, do a little poll.
Okay, you already suggested that.
And I disregarded it once already. We're counting down the top five slow dance songs, so-called, of the 70s.
The number two song goes to a band called Heatwave.
This is the worst idea for a top five ever.
Always
At least in the 90s, they had some oomph to them.
Actually, these are great because, you know, the slower the song, the
deeper the love.
Exactly.
Yeah. These songs all make me feel like a bristly beard is brushing up against my face. You know what I mean?
I feel like I'm sitting on a...
I'm sure that's how some of the gals felt, but...
The gals like this song way back when.
It's like you can see the music video running through your head as you do it. That's two people sitting in the moonlight, drinking wine, clinking glasses next to the fire.
I know tomorrow.
I think Tim would concur that these are some 70s slow songs we've been playing today.
They are 70s slow songs, Ken.
Thank you. That was nice of you, Tim.
What about the Donna Summer song?
That was a 70s song also.
These songs all feel like being kissed by Michael McDonald. You know the words to this?
Yeah, I don't know how.
I don't think I've ever heard this song before.
Never heard this?
There's a whole slice of music in the
room. A lot of oldies.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oldies? My God, I lived in this. How could it be an oldie?
You're an oldie.
You're like 60, drama. So, I mean...
What's the next one, Scotty?
Seriously, it's like these are actually so stupefying. It's like you hear about those guys who freeze to death on top of Mount Everest because they're so cold they just can't even be bothered to move and save themselves. It's like my finger can't even reach to the mouse.
Don't let a rock fall under your foot while they're listening to this.
All right, let's finish this now. Top five 70s slow dance songs. Christ.
All right, the number one song goes
and
to you.
Just say it.
Johnny Rivers.
Slow dancer.
Swaying to the music.
Why do you all know these songs and I don't?
Play just me and my gal.
Is it gal?
Yeah, I think it is.
It is a gal.
Just me and my bra.
On AM 970.
Dude, he hit the post.
You don't know this song?
I played this a million times.
I don't think I've ever heard this.
Slow dance and sway into the music?
See, I get that Tim knows this, and I get because he was a DJ, and Scotty knows this because he's like 100. I don't understand. I don't understand why you know all this. Was it just your parents and their listening habits?
Yeah, my parents listen to a lot of music.
Of a lot of the soft rock.
Mm-hmm. Soft rock of the 70s, and hits of the 70s and more.
Yeah.
Most people can remember songs even from their early childhood. I remember things riding around the car like 4 or 5 years old when my parents had the radio.
I don't really, unless it was really smooth listening like Roger Whittaker. My parents, typically, especially my mom, which is who I spent most of my time with, she listened mostly to like gospel and sort of smooth, like easy listening country, like Anne Murray. Like I know a lot of Anne Murray songs.
Helen
like,
Reddy.
Well, now see, but again, it's like too mainstream for my mom. It was a lot of bad country when I was growing up, like a lot of really 70s country.
So
like,
we had all full-service AM stations. When they was at the top of the hour playing the instrumental?
See, we had full-service, but the full-service stations in Kennewick, it didn't really place... It was a lot of, like, you nailed it, a theme from a summer place, a lot of that. Music Box Dancer, like, 100 times a day.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. All right, let's just take some of these calls. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Normally, I don't mind...
waiting on hold, but God, that was painful.
It really, but it, let's be honest here. Is this not the perfect music to wait on hold with?
That's true. It is, it's kind of useful. Well,
it's like the song was recorded just to be on hold for you, yeah.
How do you have a slow dance list from the 70s and not have Marvin Gaye or Otis Redding on it?
Yeah,
see, that's the problem. There's too many songs from the 70s. A lot of 70s songs were either fast disco or slow.
Then why'd you pick all the bad ones?
Yeah, Scotty. Had to make room.
I'm calling about the Scotty J polygraph thing. Well, I'm sure you can do a urinalysis test for tobacco.
No, it is true, actually. My wife offered to take care of it. My wife's like, she's like, no, I'll have somebody come down. They'll wear gloves and everything. So it is possible scientifically to test Scotty's essence.
And I guarantee that is cheaper than getting somebody to come in and run a polygraph.
It's true.
The essence of Scotty.
The urinalysis.
That's a new cologne.
It should be.
Though the pee test is like $20. You're right.
Right. Yeah, once a week.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know how many days is I did, 5 days that tobacco or nicotine stays in your system.
That's true. We could do it every Friday.
And then,
Friday show.
You do have to assume it was 5 days if you're smoking every day, and then you have to have five guys kiss him.
Actually,
we should do it on Wednesday.
Do it on Wednesday because it covers the weekend then.
Exactly, because he would have gotten a scot free.
No, you're right.
You don't have a problem with that, do you, Scotty?
I don't have any problem with any of this because I don't smoke, so.
All right, excellent. Thank you. He's being soothed by the sounds of Johnny Ritter. All right. Thank you. Bye now. All right.
We have so got to break.
Tim, are you prepared with more news?
Oh, yes.
Fantastic.
Oh, as
we'll break here. Come back with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay right there. All right, it's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Wake up! All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Evil, bloodthirsty media baron Rupert Murdoch has added a long-coveted prize to his empire with the purchase of Dow Jones & Company. Dow Jones announced today that the company has signed a definite merger agreement with Murdoch's newest corporation to buy out the Wall Street Journal for $5 billion. That's chump change to Mr. Murdoch. Some people in Manhattan say they're not happy with this.
So you can always hope that that the newspaper will somehow remain independent, but if it does lose its independence, it'll be a sad day. I think the quality of the paper will probably suffer.
That's right. Some other people don't like it.
I think that he's just looking to get more attention and to eventually buy out every possible publication and news in the city, and he'll control the media.
Just like the BTN.
Well, okay, there you go.
Yes, it was a big surprise on the Today Show as Whoopi Goldberg has announced that she's got the job.
I love this show. I love coming on it. I love hanging out with you guys. So this is a big old thrill for me.
What are you most and least looking forward to on the show there, Miss Whoopi?
The hot topics thrill me.
That's hot.
I just love it. Yeah. I love it. And the thing I'm looking forward to the least is trying to get in between everyone talking at one time.
So this is she's replacing who on The View?
Rosie.
All right.
There's still one opening.
Who else left?
Somebody else left.
You know,
is Elizabeth Hasselbeck on maternity leave?
Maybe.
I know she's all knocked up and.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, write her off the list. This topic is just like that 70s top five, Scotty did. Where even now, as we start to talk about The View, it's like it's a drain on my will to live. Except to say that we were talking about this before the show, that Whoopi Goldberg, it just is one of those people who is inexplicably famous. And still employed. And I think, who were you comparing her to, Tim? Was it Robin Williams? It was somebody.
Tony Danza.
Tony Danza, who continues to get jobs and yet really has no aptitude at anything. I mean, The Color Purple being sort of an aberration. I mean, that notwithstanding, Whoopi Goldberg didn't really do anything. And the question is she continuing doing that god-awful radio show that she was doing, that FM talk show? That's probably gone. Cause I think that station.
I haven't heard anybody talk about that in the longest time.
No, we had that one chunk of her show that Lowe recorded and sent to us, but I don't think we've ever heard anything about it since then. I'll have to look it up now to see if her radio show's even still on the air. All right.
Sports. The Aberdeen Ironbirds are having ladies' night tonight, and all the ladies get some pink bats. Get there early.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic. Are those, are they regulate? Are they regulation size bats, or are they?
For the ladies.
Okay, right.
I don't know. Come on, you know that's funny. Let's see here. I'm looking here. Whoopi Goldberg. It seems like I'm trying to find out if Wake Up with Whoopi is still happening. Wake Up with Whoopi. Nah, it's an outdated page. I can't tell if the show's still on or not. All right. Well, there you go. Tim, I look over. So great. I look away for 30 seconds. I look over, and Tim has already wrapped up his headphones, and he's packing things into his bag.
Well, I have to go back to the newsroom because I have plenty of news to cover this afternoon.
I was going to say, wrapping up his headphones so he can take them back to the news preparation area. And
here we are in the middle of this heinous heat wave. And John McCain is canceling his Portland appearance. Free watermelons are being given away Friday.
So he was supposed to be at the Heathman today?
Yeah, for a fundraiser. And then Seattle tomorrow.
All right, but so did he... Is he in town, or did he just, like, call him? And I won't be there.
He's doing the Lord's work in Washington.
Okay. And everybody...
It's a more intimate atmosphere than the... Capitol Hill is a little bit more intimate than
he's
going to
be performing with Justin Guarini.
Yes.
Wonderful. Fantastic. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, world's greatest newsman. Back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour, all the way through Lycus. We have another break, Nick?
We sure do.
Fantastic. Let's do it now. We'll come back and wrap it up after this. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733. That kind of surprised me. 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show wraps up next. Don't go anywhere. All right, we now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Rick, did you know Whoopi Goldberg has no eyebrows? And you know what? I'll be damned, you're right.
I cannot believe you didn't know that.
Who knew? I mean, other
than
you.
When she was playing Guinan, and then when she was in Ghost.
I guess maybe in Star Trek I might have noticed, but just assumed it's because she was, you know.
She's very expressive, like, above eye area that kind of maybe looked like eyebrows.
Not above eye area.
Well, they kind of wrinkle like eyebrows, but no, it's completely smooth.
Her ocular folds seem very brow-like. So I'm looking at this photograph of her right here. This is her headshot. Like her 8x10. Damn it, she has no eyebrows. Did she ever have eyebrows? Is this like, sort of an interesting quirk or something? Is it her gimmick? And I don't have any eyebrows. All right. Well, whatever. Rick, I heard a little bit of your show today regarding polygraph tests. This guy says, I am a state and federal certified licensed investigator.
Oh.
Or, I'm sorry, licensed investigator. I mainly practice criminal felony cases for the defense. And then he says, the polygraph expert you need is, I won't give the guy's name, is blank. Here is his phone number. He's a former law enforcement polygrapher who now is in private practice. He is the main resource for all the defense attorneys in Portland. He is so respected that the defense attorney will often drop a case on an individual based solely on this man's examination. I have no affiliation with him other than using his service on felony cases. Best of luck, CW. Thank you, sir. So, and he gives this guy's name and phone number. All right, well, if he's reputable, he may not wish to be associated with us, but now I have to call him. We'll see if we can. Hey, he might do it in exchange, get a little publicity for his firm. So, all right, I will look into that. Let's see. About Scotty's top five. Rick, please, pity us. Pity those of us who grew up in the 70s. It was all we had. We were young and stupid. We didn't know the music sucked. Yeah, it was just a tremendous energy kill. I mean, it just completely sucked all the vitality out of the program. Glad we put it at the end. Well, I don't know what to do for tomorrow. I don't really want to do the top five. We could do the top five 60s slow dance song, but it just seems I burnt that out. I have no idea. We'll come up with something for tomorrow. Rick, as soon as you brought up the topic of burping on command earlier today, I couldn't help but hear the sounds of your multitudes of sweaty, greasy listeners all sitting around the radio belching like frogs.
Gross.
You know that thousands of dudes were sitting around the radio just completely... Probably if we had been miking the living rooms of our listeners, we would have heard them all. He says the seismic activity in Portland at that particular moment must have gone up by at least a fraction.
That is
the Rick Emerson effect. All right. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Ed McCarthy, Lisa Goddard, and Steve Kastenbaum, and so forth. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley. The PA is Scotty J. And, of course, the gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. Like us next, Donna Mike at 7, Stephanie Miller tomorrow 6 to 8, Dennis Miller 8 to 11. We'll see you in 20 hours. As always, don't let the bastards grind it down. Do try to help the retarded, and watch out for snakes, my friends. Be safe. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Bye now.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.
Come on, Jim.